All right, this is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno. Good morrow. Happy Friday. Hopefully your Friday is off to a good start. We're going to start as we do each and every Friday morning, as we have until people get bored with it, by doing an Ask Frank Anything Hour. If you have a question about any subject, you can give me a call at 1-800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. I am prepared to tackle your questions on absolutely any subject. If you want to know my opinion on anything from the war in Iraq to the designated hitter rule, now is the time to ask it. You know, a lot of times I get frustrated with callers for being a little off topic. Any topic is now fair game, as long as it's like Jeopardy. As long as it's in the form of a question. If you want to know a little bit about my personal biographical information, you're welcome to call about that. Or if there's something happening in the news or out of the news that you want a little more insight in, something happening in the world of politics or radio that you want a little more insight in, call now, 800-848-WABC. The one thing that we would ask is you make it a question. Don't filibuster and then say, right? Or make it a question I can answer. You know, we had a little bit last Friday of people calling in and asking questions better meant for Curtis Sliwa. And I was just talking with Curtis last night, and he is going to come in studio soon for a full hour, and we are going to allow you to ask him questions about anything. So save your questions for Curtis for when he's here, but I am prepared to tackle your questions for absolutely any subject. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. And I'm really up for anything. Let me begin with Joe in Jamaica. Hello, Joe.
Hello, Frank. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you? I'm thrilled that it's Friday. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine. You know, I'm going to start off this way. I love your show.
Thank you.
Every time you come on, I learn something from it. You're a very intelligent guy. You're very gifted. I want you to keep up the great work.
Thank you.
I only have one complaint.
Oh, I'm ready.
Just one.
Okay.
Every time you answer the phone, the only borough you say something nice about is the Bronx. You always call them the boogie down Bronx. What about the other four boroughs? We got good things too. We boogie down also.
In the future, I should say, if somebody calls from Staten Island, I should say calling from Gary from Shaolin, or people call from Brooklyn. I think they call that the top of the food chain. Whatever the case may be, you want a nickname for each borough.
Yeah.
You know what? I will make an effort to do more of that. That is a solemn promise, Joe. That's a great criticism, and I will do that. I will do that. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
Thank you. 800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Joe in Manhattan. Hello, Joe.
Listen. Hi. How are you today? I hope you're doing very well. And your, wife?
Thank you.
Did you find out the gender yet?
No, we're not going to find out. We're going to be surprised.
Okay. What about naming him, if it's a male, Dominic? That's a beautiful name, Dominic, by the way.
I like the name Dominic a lot, actually.
With a C or with a Q-U-E?
No, it would be probably with a C. I ran into a former city councilman, Dominic Recchia, last night as well, and I just reminded me, seeing both him and Dominic Carter in the same night, reminded me how much I am fond of the name Dominic. But I think we're settled on a boy's name. We haven't yet come to a consensus on a girl's name yet, though.
Okay, now here is my question.
Okay.
Okay. I think it's going to be easy for you. I have two of them, two questions, very easy to respond to. Now, one is, if you were to live the rest of your life, right, only in the three states, Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, for the rest of your life, would you pick those three, or you would pick instead Florida, Louisiana, Texas?
You know,
I have one more question.
Honestly, I have never been to Florida, Maine, or I've never been to Maine, Vermont, or New Hampshire, so I can't really answer. I have been to Florida. I think it's okay, but I'm not one of these people that loves Florida. If I had to pick between the two, I might pick Florida, Texas, and Louisiana because of one, the tax climate, and two, all the friends and family that I have that live in Florida, and all the transplanted New Yorkers that live in Florida.
And more choices. Texas being the second largest state in the United States.
Yeah,
so you have tremendous opportunities.
This is true. This is true.
Here is one question you might not want to answer, though.
Okay.
Why is it that Mr. Giuliani, right, on you have 40 hosts whose podcasts are available on WABC, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your specific website, 40 of them approximately.
Right.
How come Giuliani's 3 to 4 o'clock podcast is not repeated, available, by the way?
So I'll be honest, I don't know the answer to that, so the best I can do is guess. My guess to that is I know Mayor Giuliani does a separate podcast in addition to his radio show, and the only thing that I could think is that maybe he doesn't want his radio show also podcast so that he can drive traffic to his main podcast platform. But honestly, Joe, I have no idea. It's just a guess on my part. Thank you for the call. 800-848-WABC. Hey, coming up in the 3 o'clock hour, we're going to talk with John Stossel, 19-time Emmy award-winning reporter. I am very much looking forward to that conversation. You might remember him from his segments on 2020 over the years. I've been watching him for decades, really since I was a child. And I've always enjoyed him, even when I disagreed with some of his premises. I always thought he was thought-provoking. I always thought he was controversial. He has left Fox Business, was at Fox Business for years, was at ABC News for years. Now he's just on the internet. So I'm going to ask him why, what led him to do that, what led him to leave the world, a big network like Fox Business and a big network like ABC News, and go just to the internet. I'll ask him about that. And then it looks like a fascinating story in National Geographic, and I have to thank our owner, John Catsimatidis. By the way, did you hear that press conference on his show today? I don't want to make this show too parochial, but it looks like it's official. As of today, they are bringing a new baseball team to New York City. They are saving baseball in my personal favorite borough. And if you didn't get to hear that announcement, they had a whole press conference on the air. I would encourage you to listen to the podcast of the Cats at Night show. It's something I'm pretty excited about. And I was at the baseball game in Coney Island last night in the Cyclones game. It's all anybody was talking about. People that I didn't even know listen to the station, people that I didn't even know knew me, were coming over to me and say, hey, did you hear? Yeah, did I hear? Of course I heard. How did you not hear? So it's pretty exciting as a baseball fan and a New Yorker. It's nice to see people giving New Yorkers a reason to stay in the city and state as opposed to leave. 800-848-WABC. Peter is in Manhattan. Hello, Peter.
Yes, hi. I have a question for you. Is religion important in your life? And if so, what religion would you raise your child in?
It's such a good question. And so I will say God is important in my life, right? I'm a little less adherent to any specific organized religion. I grew up Catholic, but the last few years I've come to identify more and more as Episcopalian. But Episcopalian's kind of like a mini Catholic. My wife grew up as an evangelical Christian, so she is not that into Catholicism. So what we've been doing on Sundays is going to a bunch of different churches to see if we can find one that we are both comfortable with and both comfortable baptizing our child with. So God is important. In terms of which specific religion, that's less important to me.
Okie doke. Take care.
Thank you, Peter. 800-848-WABC. 1-800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Pedro in the Boogie Down Bronx. Hello, Pedro.
Good morning, Frank.
Good morning.
My question to you is, are you making preparations or changes around the house because you have the cat to protect your new baby?
That is such a good question. The primary change that I have made is repeatedly telling both my cat Melchizedek and my wife and anyone who asks that if that cat scratches my child, he is out. He is out on the street. He's we'll find a good home for him. We'll sell him to a Chinese restaurant if we have to. But, and every time I say that to my wife, she gives me the eye roll and assures me that he's going to be a very good sibling to the baby. So we haven't made many preparations. I think what my wife has started to do is start playing baby sounds around the cats so that they get used to the sound of, babies crying and making baby noises, so it's not totally foreign to them. But we'll see. I'll tell you what I'm really worried about is today my sister-in-law is leaving for the Dominican Republic. She's dropping off her cat with us to cat sit for a week. Now, I don't know how she's able to pull that off. We have to pull teeth to get somebody to clean the litter box when we're away. She's able to just drop off the cat with no problem. But I guarantee you, when she drops off this cat with us, QWERTY, it's his name, this cat is going to have so many problems with Melchizedek and vice versa. So that's the more immediate thing I'm worried about this week. All right, Pedro, thank you for the call. 800-848-9222. I'm answering your questions on anything. You have questions about UFOs, questions about aliens, Bigfoot, science, space, relationships, politics, radio, history, you name it. Any question, I will do my best to answer it. 1-800-848-WABC. Greg is in New Jersey. Hello, Greg.
Hey, what's your favorite Western movie?
Oh, that is such a difficult question. I'm going to give you an answer, but there are so many great ones. I love Stagecoach. I love Unforgiven. I'm not counting Blazing Saddles because I consider that more of a comedy than a Western, but I do love the film Blazing Saddles. I love Tombstone and Wyatt Earp, but if I had to pick a favorite, absolutely gun to my head, had to pick a favorite, it would be The Outlaw Josie Wales.
Mine is Good, Bad, and the Ugly.
I have
watched that I don't know how many times.
I'm a fan of that whole trilogy, that whole Man with No Name trilogy, for A Fistful of Dollars, For a Few Dollars More, and The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. It's worth it just for the soundtrack. And even though it's a little campy because the dialogue doesn't exactly match up with their lips because of the looping, it's so much fun and it looks great. And I'll tell you, Eli Wallach, some actor,
yes,
in that film. It's a great picture. Great picture.
Yeah, the acting makes the movie. And you can't Lee Van Cleef, Eastwood, and especially Eli Wallach. And you know what? The scenery, too. So it's very realistic.
Yeah.
Very realistic. You know, when I watch a war movie or a Western, and the guys don't have, like, dirty hands, or they're not sweating, or their uniforms aren't dirty after, like, a week in the field or so, it's like, what the heck? It's not realistic, you know?
Yeah. No, it's a great picture. Now, remind me, that the grave where they claim the money is buried.
Right.
It's Archibald Stanton, right? Am I remembering
Archibald
that correctly?
It was the grave next to
Right, right. Well, don't give any spoilers for people that haven't seen the picture.
Okay.
But I wanted to see if I remember the name. It is Archibald Stanton, right? That is,
yes. You know what I don't understand is when Eastwood wrote the name of the grave on that rock, would they have figured it out if they shot him?
No way! No way! All those graves in that cemetery, they never would have figured it out. All right. Greg, great call. Thank you. I'm ready to answer your question on absolutely any subject. You name it, I'm ready for it. 800-848-9222. Books, movies, UFOs, aliens, time travel, history, science, radio, politics, my personal life, you name it. It is an Ask Frank Anything hour. John Stossel will be here in the 3 o'clock hour. And don't look now, but New Zealand. Oh, I started to tell you the story before and then I got distracted. I got on one of my own tangents. New Zealand. Now there's a chunk of an old continent underneath it. I'll tell you about that coming up a little later as well. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I do want to encourage you to try, if you haven't already, especially if you're having a difficult time with digestion, try Life Change Tea. Life Change Tea is a great product. Gives you a ton of energy without caffeine. And it's something that is totally natural, all organic, and it's a great thing for your digestive health. If you've ever suffered from constipation or diarrhea or anything other than regular digestive health, then you need to try Life Change Tea. Go to the website, getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com and use the promo code Frank. If you do that, if you go to getthetea.com and use the promo code Frank when you order, you will get to enjoy free shipping anywhere in these United States. If you go to getthetea.com, they not only sell Life Change Tea on there, but they sell a lot of other great supplements. I've been taking the Coral C. This week I just started taking the vitamin A that they offer. But whatever you end up taking, if you use the promo code Frank, you won't have to pay for shipping. 800-848-WABC. We'll continue with your questions straight ahead.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. 1-800-848-WABC. If you want to comment on, or not comment, but if you have a question on any subject, I am ready to answer it. 1-800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Mike in Manhattan. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Frank. How you doing?
I'm well, thanks.
A while back, I called because I know you were a Paul Newman fan.
I am, yes.
And I suggested two movies to you. I don't know if you... I haven't.
You know, I am so far behind in movie watching over the course of the last couple of months. I used to be able to watch maybe two or three movies a week. Now I'm at the point where I don't know that I'm getting in two movies a month, honestly.
Oh, okay.
So I haven't...
The two I recommended were HUD and Sweet Bird of Youth.
Yeah, I put both on my my Netflix queue, but I have not seen either yet.
Okay. And the other thing, Frank, do you still follow pro wrestling?
A little bit. So very little. I don't really know who the champions are in any of the federations, but Wednesday night, I was watching a little bit of AEW wrestling, and while I didn't really recognize many of the wrestlers except for Chris Jericho, I was happy to see that a lot of wrestlers I was familiar with had gotten into managing some of the modern wrestlers. I was happy to see Tully Blanchard walk out with one of the wrestling tag teams, and Jake the Snake Roberts walk out with another wrestler.
Yeah.
So I watch it when I can, but I don't follow it too closely, in all candor. I am enjoying, and if you're an old time wrestling fan, Mike, I think you would enjoy too, these A&E biographies of these various wrestlers, and I've watched all of them except for Shawn Michaels and Booker T so far, and I think they're all pretty well made.
Now, who puts those out? Is that WWE or is that put out by somebody else?
Well, it's supposedly an independent filmmaker, but they had a lot of cooperation from the WWE. So I think in general, it does put a more positive light on the WWE than if it was totally independent.
Right. Oh, well, then I have a suggestion. If you do have a son, how about Hacksaw Jim Morano?
You know, it's funny. I don't know if you go on Facebook, but at least according to the Facebook world, Ted DiBiase, I mean, it's just a publicity stunt to sell merchandise, but Ted DiBiase claims to be running for president in 2024 with Hacksaw Jim Duggan as his running mate. So, they have all this cool merchandise. I actually almost broke down yesterday and got a shirt, but I didn't end up doing it, but they have cool slogans and stuff, tough enough to get the job done. You know, Ted DiBiase has all sorts of proposals about money. Hacksaw Jim Duggan has all sorts of proposals about the price of lumber. It's pretty funny watching the two of them go about this fictitious presidential campaign.
I don't know. I like the sound of it.
Me too, yeah. Mike. Me too. They may get some votes.
It could be an independent party.
Yeah. Hey, if I can get Ted DiBiase on this show, I may offer my ballot expertise to him. So thanks for the call, Mike. 800-848-WABC. Let me say hello to Rosemary in the Hudson Valley. Mm-hmm. Hello, Rosemary.
Hi. I want to know if you have a favorite. I know you read for pleasure and for your work you're doing. You have a favorite biography or autobiography by a celebrity, a favorite one.
Oh, by a celebrity. You know, it has to be, and I'm not just saying it because he comes on this show frequently, but it has to be Johnny Russo's book. Johnny Russo's book has the most it's called Hollywood Godfather. It has the most interesting stories in it that that I've ever read or ever heard. And if only half of them are true, he's still the most interesting man in the world. I mean, it is a fascinating book. You read one chapter and you learn all about Hollywood. You read another chapter, you learn about the mob. You read another chapter, you learn all about Vegas. It's just it's a page turn. Turner and the life that this guy has led and the way that he's able to put it down into print is extraordinary. So if I had to pick one at the moment, like if you asked me if I could think about it for a day or two, I might have a different answer. But at the moment, it would be Johnny Russo's book, Hollywood Godfather.
Your interviews with him were great. Could I name a couple real fast?
Sure, please. Yeah, I'm always looking for a good book recommendation.
Esoteric, about old Hollywood, very well written. I recommend it to a few friends who were like with their mouths open. Wow, this is great. Evelyn Keyes, she died a few years ago. It was called Scarlett O'Hara's Younger Sister, all about old Hollywood, all the goings on, what's gone with the wind. And she's still around. Elizabeth Ashley, Postcards from the Road.
Well, I'm putting both on
Elizabeth Ashley?
I haven't read either, but I will put both of them on my list. And who knows, maybe Elizabeth Ashley might be a good guest one night.
Oh, if you could get her. God, she led such a life. She could talk about old New York. She was like 20 when she won a Tony for a play in New York. Just, she had such a wild ride. If you could get her, that would be marvelous. She's a great actress.
I will work on it, Rosemary. Thank you very much for the call and for listening. Oh, I didn't mean to cut you off there. I thought you were done. 800-848-WABC if you have a question on any subject. Let me say hello to Ben in Park Slope. Hello, Ben.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for taking the call.
It's going well. How's it going with you?
Good. Loving the show.
Thank you.
I don't get to listen too often because I work early, but, you know, really fun
stuff. Well, to what do we owe the pleasure of your patronage tonight, Ben?
Well, first, before my main question, just a quick, easy one. Stock market up or down tomorrow, since I can ask you anything.
Doesn't mean I'm going to be right, but I will
to gamble.
I'm going to say the stock market is going to finish up, and it will be up tomorrow.
I like that. Okay, I like that. More importantly, so I think you're the perfect person to ask this. What is this craziness with this Havana syndrome and these diplomats getting sick in hotels in, like, various parts of the world? Are we, like, living in the future, or are these people just being poisoned?
Well, I think that it's clear that these diplomats are being attacked, right? I think they're being attacked by someone. I, unlike everybody else, am not willing to immediately blame Russia for this attack, but I do think that they're being attacked by some entity. I don't know what the cause is, but I don't think it's accidental at all.
It's pretty weird. That's pretty freaky stuff. If we're talking about, like, going through walls with lasers, I mean, joy.
It is. It is very scary, Ben. These are scary times, that's for sure. 800-848-WABC. I will continue with your questions next. 1-800-848-WABC. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno.
This is The Other.
Answering your questions on any subject, 1-800-848-WABC. Let me say hello to Mark in Garden City. Hello, Mark.
How are you, Frank?
I am doing just fine. How are you? I'm happy it's Friday. How can you be in a bad mood on Friday?
Well, you got that right. Frank, I wanted to ask you, what would you say is your short list of all-time funniest movies?
Well, how many do we get on a short list? Three or five?
I'll say five, but if you have three, that's fine.
All right. So I am a Mel Brooks fanatic, and I am a Woody Allen fanatic. So in I have to put Blazing Saddles on there. I have to put The Producers on there.
Frank, can you tell me which is number one and which is number five that way?
So
can you break them up
I'd
that
have
way?
To prepare a little on that one. But I think I might put The Producers one. I think I might put Blazing Saddles two. In terms of the Woody Allen movies that I'm fond of, I don't know what I would rank first. It might be I don't know. It might be Manhattan. Might be Annie Hall. I don't know. See, there's so many classic Woody Allen movies. I'll go with but I'm trying to think about movies that I really laugh out loud during. I found I'm a Steve Martin guy too. I'm quite fond of Naked Gun. I still laugh over Naked Gun. I'm going to go. Those will be my and Airplane. All right, I'm going to go Airplane. These are not in order. I'm going to go Airplane, Naked Gun, Blazing Saddles, The Producers, and I'll go Annie Hall. Gun to my head, Annie Hall.
Frank, speaking of Woody Allen, do you remember the old Woody Allen movie, What's Up, Tiger Lily?
Yeah, that was the first film he ever directed.
That was one of the funniest movies. I mean, I was laughing hysterically during that.
Yeah, I found it pretty funny. If people don't know the premise, basically they redubbed a Japanese movie. I guess it was a Japanese movie, right, Mark?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
With American dialogue that had nothing to do with the original story. And it made for not only a funny premise, but it was executed brilliantly. I enjoyed it very much. I enjoyed it very much.
Yeah, the Japanese movie was a James Bond kind of a secret agent movie.
Right.
And it was a very serious movie. And Woody Allen entirely rewrote the script. And the basis of the story was that they were trying to find a secret recipe for egg salad.
Yeah. No, it's a classic. It is a classic. And for him to have that amount of talent as a young director, it tells you a lot about his comedic leanings, irrespective of what people think of his personal life. Thank you for the call, Mark. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848. WABC, let me say hello to Roberta on Staten Island. Hello, Roberta.
Hi, Frank. I just saw some excerpts of the town hall meeting of Biden, and I just think do you think you should get a cognitive test like Donald Trump was forced to take? Because he seems very in a big fog, as far as I could see.
So I only saw a little bit of it, but I have to tell you, some of the excerpts that I saw on Twitter, it didn't look great. It didn't look like he at times was stammering. Look, I stammer at times myself, and I know he's battled a stutter. But there's no way that you can look at the Joe Biden of 2021 and compare it to the Joe Biden of 2012 when he was debating Paul Ryan and eating Paul Ryan's lunch in those debates and not say that there's some cognitive decline. So if he's not getting cognitive tests, I think he should. I think whoever the president is, whether it's Obama, Trump, Biden, Clinton, Bush, or Reagan, I think whoever the president is should get regular cognitive tests as part of their regular medical testing. And I think it's probably a good idea for the results of those tests to be made public.
I think so too.
But don't get me wrong, Roberta. I want Joe Biden to be as healthy as can be mentally and physically, because people may not like President Biden, but I think you may not be crazy about President Biden, but President Harris, if she were to take over office, then it would be a totally different ballgame, and it would be a ballgame that you're not necessarily happy with. I was listening to Bernie McGurk yesterday comment on some of Joe Biden's issues in that town hall meeting. And Bernie said, oh, we got to use the 25th Amendment. Use the 25th Amendment. I'm saying no way, because I would rather have a Joe Biden that's at 70 or 80% than a Kamala Harris that's at 100% any day of the week. That's my opinion. You don't have to agree with it. 1-800-848-9222. Mike is in New Jersey. Hello, Mike.
Good morning, Frank. Hope all are well.
All is well. Thank you.
Good. My question is, if you had to pick one actor, filmography, whose filmography would you pick?
In terms of the best quality movies?
Yes. If you can only pick one, if you had to go to an island and take all their movies with you, who would that be?
It's such a good question because, see, you know, Clint Eastwood has so many classics and he has such an impressive body of work. So my favorite actor is William Shatner. That's my favorite actor. But that's not the question that you're asking. So if I had to pick one actor and I could take all their films with me and those are the only films I could watch for the rest of my life, I think the answer would have to be Robert De Niro, because I think De Niro, he's made, especially in the last few years, he's made some movies that have not been so great, but he's made so many terrific pictures. I mean, you got Raging Bull, you got Godfather Part Two, you have Wag the Dog, you have Analyze This, even Frankenstein. He's in so many great. I just watched him in that film with Charles Grodin, Midnight Run, Bang the Drum Slowly, even New York, New York, which everybody hated. Comedies like Meet the Parents, American Hustle, which I really liked. Even The Joker. The latest Batman movie, Jackie Brown. I mean, the guy has such, you almost forget how many classic films that he has.
How about Silver Linings Playbook?
Another one. There's too many to list.
I agree, Frank. He would be my guy. Even
Goodfellas. I didn't even mention Goodfellas.
Yeah, or Casino.
Yeah, right. Casino is one of my favorite movies of all time.
You never get tired of watching De Niro.
That's for sure. That's for sure. So as much as he might frustrate me with some of the things that he says, if I had to pick one actor's filmography, it would absolutely be Robert De Niro. Thank you, Mike. Answering your questions on any subject, 1-800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Juan is in Manhattan. Hello, Juan. Juan, I got you. John or Juan? Juan? All right, we're moving on. 1-800-848-9222. Bonnie is in Manhattan. Hello, Bonnie.
Oh, hi, Frank. I'm really enjoying your show, and I'm still staying up until 1 o'clock in the morning, and I'm still not getting any sleep, but that's okay.
That's what we're counting on, Bonnie. Thank you.
I just want to make your show even better than it is, if that's possible. I have a question. Did you ever, I know you like to go and get out of the city on the weekends, and I know Atlantic City is one of your favorite spots, but I have a feeling that you're a very wide audience out there. There are a lot of really world travelers out there who are so frustrated because half the world is still in lockdown with COVID. I was thinking that maybe once a week you could do a little blurb on a travel type show, and I would suggest to you, because I spent my whole life in the travel business, that you have someone like Pauline Froma come on, who is absolutely the quintessential expert on world travel. She's so incredible. She used to have her own radio show. I don't think she's on the radio anymore, but she runs the Froma budget travel website, and she's an incredibly wonderful lady. And people could call in or say, has anybody listening been to such and such a place? And
Bonnie,
do you have any recommendations?
It's a great idea. It's an absolutely great idea. I did a travel hour with a travel panel. We had Juliette Huddy, Barry Goldsmith, and another gentleman in about a month ago, and I think it went really well, and the ratings were great for it, and the response was great for it, and I've been meaning to do something like that again. So I don't know if we're going to do it once a week, but we will make an effort to focus on travel more often. But I also want to encourage you, Bonnie, I'm sure you have to sleep once in a while, but every morning at 5:40, Juliette Huddy does this Jet Set Juliette travel update where she focuses on a different aspect of travel. And if you're interested in travel, it's a segment that you're really going to enjoy, I think.
Sometimes I have been able to stay up that late, and I've heard her, yes, and she's very, very good, and she has some very, very interesting ideas. But if you were looking for somebody to come in and guest host with you, Pauline Froma, she lives right here in New York City, and she's just incredible.
I will put her on the list, Bonnie.
Now, can I just say one more
thing?
Sure,
go ahead. Yes.
All right. I have something to say about the cats and the baby, okay? Don't worry about it, because in case you don't know it, on that cold December night in Bethlehem when Christ was born, there was a cat with kittens in the manger, in the stable, I'm sorry. And it was so cold that she had four kittens, and the Blessed Mother took all of the kittens and put them up into the trough where the baby Jesus was sleeping. And in the morning, when she took them down, she kissed each one of them on their forehead. And it's called the Kiss of Mary. So the next time you look at a cat, especially if it's got any striped markings, look at the M in the middle of the forehead between the two eyes. They will never harm the baby. Trust me.
Well, that's good to know, Bonnie. I guess now we also know why they call them.
Listen,
we also know why they call them.
I don't know if it's true or not, but when you tell that story to little children, they are so mesmerized by it, especially if they love cats. And I'm sure your wife will love the story, too.
Thank you, Bonnie. I'm sure she just did. I'm sure she just heard it. And now we finally know why they call them cat-holics. 800-848-9222. Paul is in the Boogie Down Bronx. Hello, Paul.
Hi, good evening, Frank. As a staunch wrongful conviction advocate, have you heard of the Jeffrey Deskovic Foundation?
Yes, I've interviewed Jeffrey on the radio.
Okay, and you're aware that he's another one of Pirro's many victims, along with Richard DiGuglielmo, Anthony DeSimone, Stephen Nowicki, and others.
Yeah, Paul, I am aware of the Jeffrey Deskovic case. I'm glad he was freed from prison. And he's an attorney now. He's helping to get a lot of other wrongfully convicted people freed from prison. The big story yesterday here in New York, a gentleman who was wrongfully convicted and incarcerated for 23 years has been freed. And I tell you, I look at stories like that of people who have been wrongfully imprisoned and forced to be in prison for decades. And I just my heart goes out to them. And that is the fundamental problem, in my view, with the criminal justice system these days, is there's too many people in prison who don't belong there, and there's too many people who are not in prison that do belong there. And I don't know if any of you watch CBS Sunday Morning, but we were watching it last Sunday, and they had this story, I think it was out of Missouri, where there are these two gentlemen who even the prosecutors acknowledge aren't guilty, but they're not able to get out of prison because of some weird loophole. And it's just my heart bleeds for these guys. 800-848-9222. We will continue with your questions in just a minute. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead. Ask Frank.
Night of Midnight proudly presents Ask Frank.
Ask Frank anything.
Ask Frank anything.
Ask Frank anything.
Ask Frank anything.
No question, no topic is too big, and I am ready to take it on. 800-848-WABC. Ed is in New Jersey. Hello, Ed.
Yeah, Frank, just as an afterthought, a two-part question. What can the world do, or what can you do, what can we do to get Russia kicked out of the Security Council? I believe they're responsible for the microwave weapons attacks. And what would be a good retaliation against Russia? Maybe perhaps take out the Crimea bridge that he built?
Okay, well, so first, the let me answer the first question first because it's an easier one to answer, right? So look, we've spent a lot of time covering on Russia. I think aside from John Batchelor,
he's a bad dude.
Well, so I think I'm gonna disagree a little bit. There are a lot of bad dudes, right? The king of Saudi Arabia and the crown prince of Saudi Arabia, they are the baddest dudes on the planet. Let's look at the Ayatollahs in Iran. Let's look at the dictator of North Korea. Let's look at Duterte in the Philippines. Let's look at Bolsonaro in Brazil. Let's look at Xi Jinping in China. Have I listed a good dude yet? Okay. You want to look at the dictatorship in Qatar. You want to look at the leaders in the United Arab Emirates. So we don't have the luxury as a country of only dealing with nice guys as our world leaders, as other world leaders. The bottom line is Russia controls the second largest stockpile of nuclear weapons on the planet. And the sad reality of the world these days is having nuclear weapons automatically makes you a player in global affairs. So we can do what President Trump talked about doing, he never really got there, but he talked about doing it, which is get along with Russia, negotiate with Russia, talk to Russia. It's a strategy favored by people on the right, like Pat Buchanan and at one time Donald Trump, and people on the left, like Tulsi Gabbard and Bernie Sanders and Dennis Kucinich, or we could continue to do what we've been doing and continue this Cold War. As far as the first part of your question goes, there's nothing that can be done to remove them from the Security Council. That's a part of the UN Charter that the United States and Russia, formerly the Soviet Union, are both permanent members of the UN Security Council. However, if you disagree with me, Ed, which I'm sure many of you do, and a lot of and people in both parties, by the way, disagree, then one of the things that the Biden administration could have done to retaliate would have been to curtail the natural gas pipeline, allowing Russia to sell massive amounts of natural gas to Germany. The Nord Stream 2 pipeline. That is going to be a financial windfall for Russia. And you had Vladimir Zelensky and Ukraine begging us, please don't approve it. Don't approve it. And it was interesting to me, Donald Trump, who, and I criticized Trump for this, Donald Trump, who everybody said was a puppet of Putin, which is not true, he publicly embarrassed Germany on the world stage for buying natural gas from Russia. I don't think that was a good strategy. I think we should make an effort to get along with Russia. I don't think we should be looking to retaliate against Russia. But Ed, next week, I think on Wednesday or Thursday, we're going to have a return engagement from Vladimir Posner. And look, every time Vladimir Posner's been on, I've tried to ask him the toughest questions that I can, and he's answered them. I think he's answered them very well, and I'm going to invite you guys to ask him some questions as well. It's my opinion. My opinion is we need to get along with Russia, not retaliate against Russia. It doesn't mean we don't show strength. I think we do show strength. But there's too many areas in this world right now where we need to cooperate with Russia. Nuclear proliferation, number one. Islamic terrorism, number two. The situation in Syria, number three. The situation in Afghanistan, number four. Space travel, number five. Are we really going to say, oh, let me stick our head in the sand and point our fingers at Putin and say, oh, bad guy, bad guy? What is Putin going to do? Well, he's not going to say, oh, the United States is mad at me. Let me take my ball and go home. No, he's going to partner with other geopolitical rivals of the United States, like China. So explain to me, all you Russia-phobes out there who think the way to handle Russia is with more bravado, someone's going to have to explain to me how it serves the United States' interests to chase Russia off the world stage, out of the G7, right into bed with China. I think it was a mistake to throw them out of the G7. And I think we should make an effort to have better relations with Russia. If I ever run for president, that's going to be a big part of my platform. Don't worry, I'm not running. Believe me. 800-848-9222. Tom is in Bloomfield. Tom, what's on your mind?
Good morning, Frank. I heard you about 15 minutes ago. I tuned in. I heard you talking about some movies. And one of the movies you mentioned was Producers. I'm assuming the 1968 Dermot Bell version?
1969, yes. I like both, but my favorite is the original, yes.
Absolutely. I'm just curious, what are your top Mel Brooks movies?
So the Producers and Blazing Saddles are right up there. Young Frankenstein.
That's what I say.
Young Frankenstein is right up there. And I know it's not usually considered one of his classics, but with one of my favorites happens to be Spaceballs. I love Spaceballs. I think it's absolutely phenomenal. And while he didn't direct it, he did produce and star in it. The film High Anxiety is an absolute classic as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely. Last year around October when everything was shut down, I did little movies in my backyard, and we did we spoke it several times. We did The Godfather 1 and 2. We did Goodfellas, but we also did a Mel Brooks night. So we did Producers. We did Spaceballs. We did Young Frankenstein, and we did Blazing Saddles. And it was awesome.
You got to invite me next time, Tom. You got to invite me next time. I will be there.
Bloomfield, not too far.
Yeah, no, I know folks in Bloomfield, and it's a great, great community. 800-848-WABC. Bob is in Fresh Meadows. Hello, Bob.
Yes, Frank. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And since you're doing cat sitting, I got something for you. I would get another cat litter box.
Well, we actually did because we have one cat that's going in the bathtub separate from all the other cats. So we put another cat litter box in there.
How many do we have?
I believe it or not, I have three step cats.
Oh, I got five, and they're all adopted, so I saved their lives.
Well, that's very nice. That's very impressive. I think it's one of the best things people can do.
Yes. Okay, I want to ask you something. Do you think Donald Trump, if he had the National Guard at the voting places, you think things would have been different?
You know, obviously, there's no way to know, but I'm going to say no, Bob. I think there's a lot of things that if Donald Trump would have done them differently, would have resulted in a different result. But I don't think the National Guard was one because Donald Trump really didn't lose the election at the polling booths. He lost it with mail-in voting. I mean, it's the mail-in voting, particularly in states like Pennsylvania, that really hurt him. We could get into the reasons as to why that's the case and if mail-in voting should have even been permitted in the manner that it was. But no, I don't think it was the – I don't think he lost this election at the voting booths. That's why I remember on election night. I left – it was on election night, Wednesday, the Wednesday after election day. I left here at 6 a.m. because I was only on until 5 at the time. But I stayed on until 6 for a special. I left – thinking Trump was president. I went to John Catsimatidis, our owner, was kind enough to get us a hotel. I went to the hotel to sleep for 3 hours, came back here to be on the air at 10 a.m., and then it was looking increasingly like Biden was going to be the president. So part of the reason it looked like Trump had an early edge was because of the in-person voting. 800-848-WABC. Mike is in West Palm Beach. Hello, Mike.
Hello, Frank. Funny, man. You know, like I spoke to Dominic before, and you, Frank Russo, on the weekend, great, ABC Radio, whatever. I didn't know, so you and your wife, you don't want to know about the gender of your child. Okay? That,
well, yeah, I mean, once he or she is born, we'll know, unless they're non-binary and they want to identify as something else.
Right, rim shot, where's my drumsticks? You know, Frank, my favorite movie, and may your first child be a masculine one, is The Godfather. Mel Brooks, off the charts, Blazing Saddles, and other greats. But I'll tell you, I was an extra in a few. Mickey Blue Eyes, the wedding scene. I'm talking to James Caan, Burt Young, and some great people behind the scenes, whatever. I'll tell you, you know what I like about talk radio, Frank? It's live theater. I like listening to people's opinions. And there's a couple of people that call. They shouldn't be calling because they curse out. You know, I call him Sybil at Stevie from Manhattan. He should learn how to play the cowbell. You know, when he's got five different names, calling five different locations. Hey, you know what, dude? Well, why don't you downshift,
Mike,
and enjoy?
Did you have a specific question, or did you just want to give your two cents?
No, I had a question. Here's the question. Are you looking forward to impending fatherhood? I'm sure you are. And I went to the Catholic Church 12 years, as you did. I didn't know, Episcopalian, that you are and you're a reverend.
Mike, I got to run. We're just about out of time for the hour. I'm not an Episcopal reverend. I want to be very clear. I am a minister in the Universal Life Church. So anybody can be a minister in the Universal Life Church. The Episcopal Church is a little more formal, as it should be. Hey, those of you that are holding, Larry, Elizabeth, Dom, Jim, Ted, I will get to you after the top of the hour. We got John Stossel coming up. Until next hour, help control the pet population. Make sure your dog or cat is spayed or neutered.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
everybody. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Those of you that are on hold who had questions, I feel bad making you hold and not answering them. I will get to you. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Couple of quick items I wanted to bring to your attention. I read this great column in militarytimes.com. I'm going to link to it on my Facebook page, facebook.com/MoranoFan. It's facebook.com/MoranoFan. You can read it for yourself. It's by a gentleman named Chris Impe. And I may invite this gentleman on the show. He is a professor of astronomy at the University of Arizona, author of all sorts of research papers on cosmology. He's written books on black holes, the future of space travel. And this whole column, which I agree pretty strongly with, is about why the military should work with scientists to study the UFO phenomenon. And it talks about how much UFOs have been in the news lately. And he talks about his own work into exploring this. And he talks about the report that came out from the Office of the Director on National Intelligence that was presented to Congress, in which it described 144 sightings by military personnel over a 17-year period. And then he makes a very good case for why the military should work with scientists to study this stuff. And he says scientists have to get over their reticence to engage with these sightings. These sightings are real. It doesn't mean they're aliens, but when you have 144 separate sightings by military personnel, that's not swamp gas. That's not weather balloons. That's not optical illusions. That's real stuff. And he goes and talks about the academic studies that have existed of UFOs and how the military has not engaged, at least not publicly, much with the scientific community in terms of exploring this stuff. And I think it certainly makes sense that they should. All right. That's my two cents. The other thing I wanted to bring to your attention, this came up on the WABC early news yesterday. And I brought it up with Sid Rosenberg around 6:15. Had to do with the Olympics. By the way, is anybody watching the Olympics? I run with a pretty diverse circle of friends and family. So far, I have not run into anybody that says they're really excited to watch the Olympics. I mean, maybe it's just me, but I don't get this. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's maybe because there's no crowds this year and that takes something away from the revelry. I don't know if it's because everyone else has so much on their mind. I don't know if it's because people are fed up with things like kneeling athletes. I'm not sure what it is. But the sense that I get is people aren't terribly excited about the Olympics. Correct me if I'm wrong, by the way, 800-848-9222. So I brought this up with Sid, and you probably have heard about this by now. The opening ceremony director of the Olympics has been fired. Kentaro Kobayashi has been dismissed one day before the event that he was producing. Why? Because footage of Kentaro Kobayashi from the 1990s recently emerged in which he appears to make jokes about the Holocaust. Japan's Olympic chief Seiko Hashimoto said the video ridiculed painful facts of history. The dismissal is the latest in a string of scandals to hit the games, which we've been chronicling. Let me say this. I recognize that the Holocaust, to put it mildly, is a very serious thing. I recognize that a lot of people don't find jokes about the Holocaust funny. The Holocaust funny. And I recognize that you saw 6 million people murdered in an attempted genocide. However, this is yet another example of someone being canceled for comments that were made decades ago. these comments were made 23, 24, 25 years ago. I think this is crazy. This was a comedy sketch 23 years ago. What were you doing 23 years ago? I don't want to be canceled for something I did 23 weeks ago. I think there's got to be some sort of a statute of limitations on firing people for jokes. I really do. I think, you know, this person has apologized. It's not as if he has a history or a pattern of making anti-Semitic remarks or anti-Semitic humor. I think this person, it's not as if he's standing by the joke and refusing to apologize. He immediately apologized. I think this person should not have been fired. And I think the idea that you can be fired for a comedy bit 23 years ago is so incredibly dangerous, and it's not something that I think the world should embrace. Because I got news for you. There's something in everyone's past that they're not proud of. And this person happened to do it on a public stage. I don't know what's in your past, but how far are we going to go back? Nothing criminal occurred here. And yet he loses his job because he made a joke that was in poor taste 23 years ago. I don't think this person should have been fired. I disagree with my friend Sid Rosenberg on this. I'd love to hear your opinion. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. John Stossel will be here in the 3 o'clock hour. We got denunciations coming up. We're going to do denunciations in the 4 o'clock hour today. But we're taking your calls at 800-848-9222. Do read that UFO column that I just posted on Facebook, facebook.com/MoranoFan. Jim in the Bronx has been patiently holding. Hello, Jim.
Yes, hi, Frank. I'm going to suggest a possible pathway for Curtis's victory. Would you like to hear it?
Well, you bet.
Okay. Look, senior citizens in New York of every race, of every ethnic group, their number one concern, I would say, is safety, security, and quality of life. So I think if Curtis were to visit every senior center in New York, in every borough, in every neighborhood, with every before every race and every ethnic group, and accompanied by guardian angels who belong to those groups, black, Latino, and in Flushing, for example, Asian, and so forth. I think basically he would have a base and a possible raise the consciousness of these people, show that he's. He shares their concerns, their fears, and everything else, and I think that would possibly lead to his long shot victory.
Well, you may be right, Jim. He's actually doing a lot of that now. He's visited senior centers in all five boroughs. The thing you have to understand, though, Jim, and I appreciate the call and the advice. The thing that you have to understand, even if Curtis does. Let's say he does four senior centers every day. Let's say he does four. Now, that's probably more than he can do, given his fundraising demands, the media demands, the press, the all sorts of other things. Let's say he does four a day. What is he talking to? At most, he's talking to 600 people. So let's say he does 600 people, and that's 6 days a week. So that is – he's talking to – 600 times 6 equals, and times, what is there? How many weeks left until the election? 20 weeks, right? 20 weeks? Let's say times 20. That is only 72,000 people. That would not, even if he won every single one of those voters over, that would not be enough to win the election. You need to sway millions of votes, millions. And unfortunately, running in a race that's decided by millions of people, the retail politics is great, but you really have to reach the masses. Television, both paid and earned media, radio, digital, things like Facebook and Twitter, where you can reach thousands, maybe even millions of people at once. That's what Curtis is going to have to do. I do think it's a crock that Eric Adams has so far been on CNN, ABC's This Week, I believe, or Face the Nation, one of the Sunday shows. He's been on CNBC with Shepard Smith. He's been on every nationwide news talk show. They're already treating him as if he's the mayor. Well, excuse me. Anybody actually want to have an election? Now, I recognize that he's the favorite, and I have no problem treating him like he's the favorite. But at least acknowledge, especially there's not a single poll out that shows him beating Curtis. At least acknowledge that there's still an election to be had. And if you're going to have Shepard Smith, if you're going to have Eric Adams on your show to talk about crime, why not have Curtis on the next day, who's been fighting crime for 42 years? What's the matter with that? Somebody called a week or two ago and said, hey, would you have Bill Pepitone on to talk about the mayor's race? You know, my answer was, sure, why not? I'd have anybody on. What is the harm? I just don't get it. But I think that the key is going to be how to get Curtis that nationwide exposure. Because so far, the only national programs since Curtis has been the nominee that have had him on, I think Newsmax has had him on a few times. And I think Fox Business had him on a couple of times. I don't even think he's made it on Fox News yet. After he's been the nominee. He was on during the primary. I don't think he's been on since he's been the nominee. 800-848-WABC. Diane is in Brooklyn. Hello, Diane.
Hey, Frank. I have two little things. One is I have a thing for Curtis, and that is Curtis acts, Adam splaps his mouth.
Adam splaps?
Flaps. F-L-A-P-S. Flaps.
Uh-huh.
You know, he flaps his mouth. He has nothing to say, but he flaps his mouth. He never stops talking. The other thing is about this Holocaust or whatever you've done in the past. You're absolutely right. We all have something. And I don't even the rapes and everything else that's going on, I don't think that anything that's that many years ago has anything to do with anything current. And if you didn't take care of it then, I don't think it should be brought up now.
Well, look, I have no problem with people bringing it up and no problem with people asking about it. What I do have a problem with is him getting fired for it. I mean, it's not as if anyone is saying this guy didn't do his job well. If he didn't do his job well, get rid of him. If he is going to create an international incident because he refuses to apologize, get rid of him. But none of that is the case. They went out of their way to find the worst thing they could about this guy from more than two decades ago. And this is a really dangerous precedent because, again, you could find something in anybody's past.
And the Olympics is in trouble already. They don't need more trouble.
All right. Thank you, Diane. 800-848-WABC. Vincent is in Brooklyn. Hello, Vincent.
Good evening, Frank.
Good
evening. I'm not going to speak about any Cosa Nostra stuff. I agree with you 100%. I would like to add, as Jesus Christ said to the people who were about to stone a prostitute in biblical times, he who is without sin cast the first stone. We all have a skeleton in our closet. We all would like to retract something we did or said years ago. But part of our Judeo-Christian heritage is the act of forgiveness. And I agree with you. This person should not have been fired, and it's going too far. Where does this... this is the kind of stuff, really, that the fascist and the Nazis did to people. They would call certain art degenerate art, and they did the same thing in Italy and Germany, and look what happened to the world. And we could all learn from our own mistakes, and as Jesus Christ said, he who is without sin cast the first stone, and people who live in glass houses shouldn't throw bricks.
Vincent, well said. You and Jesus are right on the money, in my judgment. You should absolutely learn to forgive. And again, it's not as if this guy is unapologetic. He's willing to take his lumps. And for him to be fired, I think it's just silly. It's bizarre.
It's silly.
It's silly. Vincent,
away to man's livelihood and everything. And
not only that, but now he's an international pariah. Where's he going to go to get a job now? The guy's an international punchline.
You know, Frank, the old saying is that the accusation is on the front page in boldface, on the front page of the newspaper, and on the retraction of that boldface story is on page 84 in the lower right-hand corner, and it's about
in mouse print.
Story. It's maybe five lines. Oh, we track what we said about so and so and so and so. Meanwhile, nobody saw that. They saw what was on the front page, that this person was accused of this, that, and the other. And it's going too far. And as Jerry Seinfeld even said, he doesn't want to go play college campuses anymore because there's no humor and everything. He's afraid to say anything. The college kids with this politically correct. I mean, sure, you don't want to insult people and you don't want to get down in the dirt, let's say, but where's the humor anymore? You know, as somebody earlier in the evening said, All in the Family, Norman Lear could not make that series today. The censors wouldn't allow it. It would be canceled.
Yeah, yes. Well said, Vincent, on all fronts. Thank you. 800-848-WABC. It's 1-800-848-9222. I'll tell you what. Whatever your position is on cancel culture, whatever the position is on relations with Russia, whatever your position is on any of the stuff we're talking about, I want you to have vibrant energy levels and better digestion. And I got news for you. I have three little words that are going to be your key to unlocking both of those things. Those three little words are get the tea. That's right. Go to the website, getthetea.com. You can learn more about this detox tea. It's called Life Change Tea. It's a great product. It's an herbal proprietary formula. It's a cold tea that gives you more energy without caffeine. Tastes great. No fillers. It's completely organic. No chemicals. It's a mild cleanse, a daily detox that cleanses you from the inside out. Their slogan is the tea that makes you go. And boy, oh boy, does it make you go. I drink this stuff every day. Just made a new batch of the pomegranate yesterday. Got another new batch of the pomegranate in the mail, which I'm excited about. And I think once you start trying this stuff, you'll like it as well. They have a lot of other great products, a lot of other great supplements on there as well. But the tea is really what I recommend that you start with. GetTheTea.com, promo code Frank. If you use the promo code Frank, you're going to get free shipping anywhere in the United States. That's GetTheTea.com, promo code Frank.
There she was, just walking down the street singing. She looked fine, and I nearly lost my mind. Before I knew it, she was walking next to me singing. Holding my hand just as natural as...
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno, singing Doo-Wah Diddy. 800-848-WABC is our telephone number. Talking about this story involving the Olympics director fired for this joke that he made 23 years ago. I don't think he should have been fired. I think it's another example of the cancel culture. I think it's a real shame. I was out in Coney Island yesterday, and I'll tell you, my wife and I just bought a house in October, but if I had not just purchased a home, I've lived in my neighborhood my whole life. And I can't imagine, unless I was publicly disgraced, going to live in another borough. But there was a time when I was considering moving to Coney Island. And I was looking at these beautiful buildings that John Catsimatidis has there. They really are stunning. So we went to the Cyclones game last night. It was Irish night. And it was Malachi McCourt threw out the first pitch. And then he sang between the, I think between the second and third inning, did a great job. Wonderful event put together by John McDonough. And he was kind enough to get me a ticket, and to Gary Perrone, my old boss from the Cyclones, got my wife a ticket. A lot of great listeners that were there. We saw John Kwok, who was there, and a lot of other great folks. Got to meet Malachi's son, Connor, and some of his grandchildren as well. It was a fun day, and it's always really a blast to spend any summer day in Coney Island. And if you haven't been to Coney Island yet this summer, I'd encourage you to go. There's so much to do. I can't wait to go back. I was sorry. I mean, obviously, I love doing this show. It's my great passion in life. But I was sorry that I didn't have more time to spend there. We went to the Cyclones game, and then we went out to eat. We went to Gargiulo's, which is a terrific Italian restaurant in Coney Island, and had a great time. But I was sorry I couldn't just stay there for hours. I mean, the rides, the boardwalk, the restaurants, there's so much to do there, the baseball, the bars. And if you haven't been there, it's still a place worth visiting. Not a place without its problems, much like Atlantic City, but it's still an incredibly fun place. And you know what it is? I don't know what the situation is with me, but for some reason, I wear a lot of these button-down shirts, especially during the summer. Kind of my move has become the short-sleeve button-down. My move during the winter and the fall is a long-sleeve collared button-down and a sports jacket. My move during the summer, short-sleeve button-down. So for some reason, let me give you some background. When I was 6 or 7 years old, I was buttoning my own shirts with the best of them. With the best of them. And in fact, my step cousin, Michael, he was amazed when I was 6 or 7 years old. He says, "You can button your own shirts?" And I said, "Yes." He says, "Well, you can." He says, he was like 2 or 3 years older than me. He says, "Yes, I can, but I don't know that I could at that age, at your age." So I was a prodigy when it comes to buttoning shirts. Now, I don't know what has happened to me, because for some reason, I think maybe it's because I'm always in a rush. For some reason, whenever I button shirts these days, I miss a button and it looks odd. So my wife took some photos of the two of us at the baseball game and she posted them on her Facebook page. And of course, immediately someone comments, "You know, the buttons are all messed up." And then we went out to dinner, and I see three pretty heavy politicos in the parking lot. And one of them looks at my shirt, and I could tell he looked at it. And I thought he was going to make a remark about my gut, because I still have not taken off the Cape May weight. I have 9.8 pounds to go. And he didn't say anything, but I could tell he noticed something. And then we sit down at the table and my wife says, "You know, your button is still screwed up." So I don't know what it is with me, but at some point in the last 3 years, I have lost the ability to properly button shirts. And then I took the subway from Coney Island here to the radio station, and I had forgotten that you're supposed to wear a mask on the subway now. And Coney Island, this is just how Coney Island is, no one had a mask on. No one when you got on the subway. It's like Coney Island is so much similar to Atlantic City. I mean, it's Atlantic City without the casinos, honestly. And no one had a mask on. And then I kind of am half sleeping on the subway, looking at my phone, thinking about what I'm going to talk about on the radio. And more people come on the train and they're wearing masks. I said, "Wait a minute. Why are they wearing masks?" And I said, "Oh, wait a minute. Masks are still mandatory for mass transit." Aside from a handful of people that came on, almost nobody was wearing masks on the subway. And so much for that enforcement they were telling you about, where they were claiming 70% of people wearing on the subway and they were going to ramp it up so that it was going to be 100%. Almost nobody was wearing a mask on the subway, at least coming from Coney Island last night. I don't know what your experience on the subway has been, and I think that's fine. I'm vaccinated. Hopefully a lot of these other people are vaccinated too. And if they're not, I'm hoping my vaccination will keep me from being hospitalized due to the Delta variant. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Let me say hello to Neil on Staten Island. Hello, Neil.
Hey, Frank, I would have gave you a ticket for not wearing a mask on the subway.
Well, I'm glad you're not a transit police officer.
Yeah, you're right, Frank. You're right. I'm only teaching you. I want to go about Kobayashi.
you know, it doesn't bother me that he said something years ago and he apologized. You know what bothers me, Frank? It bothers me that we got a squad in Congress now who are anti-Semitic. It bothers me that Schumer, Nadler, they keep their mouths shut. They won't say a word about them. And they're both Jews. Yet, they'll talk about a Trump supporter like they're a piece of garbage. That's what bothers me, Frank.
Well, I hear you, Neil. I think that's legitimate. Thank you. And I think that's very – I don't blame you for being upset. 800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-WABC. I got an email here. Excuse me. From Tom, who's a very astute listener and who always calls me out on my shenanigans whenever I say anything that's either inaccurate or inconsistent. He writes, and if you ever want to email me, you could do so, frank.morano@wabcradio.com. That's frank.morano@wabcradio.com. If the Olympic show director shouldn't have been fired, should Eric Adams get to run with a clean slate with respect to what he may have said in the past about Farrakhan, etc.? Answer, no. So I am not saying that the Olympic show director shouldn't have to answer questions about this, but he's answered them and he's apologized. Has Eric Adams apologized for his association with Louis Farrakhan or Lenora Filani? No, he hasn't. And if you're running for mayor, look, Curtis's history is fair game as well. Curtis staged 6 incidents for publicity. Curtis faked his own kidnapping. That's all fair game. You want to run for an office like mayor, your whole life is in the public eye. Your whole life is worthy of consideration. But it doesn't mean you should be canceled for it. As I said, because of Eric Adams' history, I did not care for him when he ran for Brooklyn Borough President in 2013. And then over the last 8 years, I've become a big fan. And I would have ranked him either first, second, or third if I was a Democrat. I love the message that he ran on. But I think if you're evaluating the two major candidates in the mayor's race, you have to look at which one is likely to implement policies that are going to help our city. And I see Eric Adams as being a total wild card. We don't know what he's going to do. We know he's going to rename streets that are renamed for slaves, or that are named for slaveholders. We know he's going to do that. But as far as anything else goes, I think it's kind of an open question. On Curtis, I know where he is on the specialized high school test. I know where he is on policing. Look, Eric Adams would be a marked improvement over Bill de Blasio. But if you're going, if you're riding in the wrong direction at 100 miles an hour and you slow down to 30 miles an hour, I don't necessarily think that's the kind of improvement New Yorkers need. So I think that, look, everything is fair game. But it doesn't mean Eric Adams or Curtis Lee or anybody else running for office should be canceled. That's my two cents. I will tell you that if you are suffering from chronic pain, you should consider making a visit over to Trinity Rehab. These folks are incredible. It's not your father's physical therapy. It's cutting edge. It's state of the art. They have something called the EPAP machine. It's FDA approved non-surgical acoustic pressure wave technology, similar to what's used to break up kidney stones. It breaks up scar tissue. It enhances healing, and it gets rid of pain fast. It's effective for conditions like back pain, neck pain, tennis elbow, shoulder tendonitis, plantar fasciitis, and knee pain. In just 3 5-minute sessions, you could be virtually pain-free. No prescription needed to get started. They're all over New Jersey, Clifton, Paramus, Wayne, Short Hills, Emerson, East Windsor, Shrewsbury, and a brand new location in Woodbridge. Call Trinity Rehab at 800-518-0977. That's 800-518-0977, or go to trinity-rehab.com.
Numbers mean much to me because of prostate cancer. I'm Johnny Braggs, the number 2, for my stepfather who died of prostate cancer, and my uncle who suffered so much after prostate cancer surgery. The number 15, 15 years since Dr. Lederman's successful treatment of my prostate cancer. The number 0, which is my PSA. Zero, after Dr. Lederman's successful prostate cancer treatment, what every man wants. The numbers 1, 2, 3, 4. Important for every man with prostate cancer. 1, getting the most successful treatment. 2, avoiding radical robotic surgery. 3, keeping sexual function. 4, maintaining urinary control. Call my Dr. Lederman, 212-CHOICES, 212-CHOICES, to consider his prostate cancer treatment for you. Most insurances, Medicare, Medicaid accepted. 1384 Broadway at 38th. Call 212-CHOICES for prostate cancer treatment. Call Dr. Lederman, 212-CHOICES. I'm glad I did. You'll be number one with Dr. Lederman.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
The summer wind came blowing in from across the sea. It lingered there to touch your hair and walk with me. All summer long we sang a song, and then we strolled that golden sand. Two sweethearts and...
Ah, Frank Sinatra, Summer Wind. By the way, if you're a Sinatra fan, you're going to want to hear Joe Piscopo's Ramsey Mazda Sunday with Sinatra show, Sunday nights at 6 p.m., right before Dina Martin. Dina Martin does a great show in which she plays some of her father, Dean Martin's music, tells some great stories. And Piscopo does a great job Sunday nights from 6 until 9. Also, on Saturday nights, we have a tremendous music lineup. We have Cousin Brucey at 6. We have Tony Orlando at 10. And this new show, which I actually got to hear a little bit of last week, on at 5 o'clock on Saturday nights, Constantine Maroulis, 2-time Tony nominee and American Idol finalist. I gotta say, I was not really familiar with Constantine, but I really like his music selection. He's playing, it seems, a lot of music from the 70s and 80s. And then Cousin Brucey plays a lot of music from the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And then Tony Orlando seems pretty 70s heavy. So you kind of get a whole bunch of different eras if you listen from 5 p.m. to midnight. I just keep it on. I have people over on Saturday night, or my wife drives around in the car or whatever. I just keep it on. And I did find out we are not going to Manalapan, New Jersey Saturday. So we get to be home Saturday, and I think the people we were going to visit in Manalapan are going to visit us. So that is just fine with me. That means we get to listen to WABC and the great music shows that we have on Saturdays. Hey, I want to bring this to your attention. I'm going to link to this on my Facebook page as well. And if you haven't already liked the Facebook page, please do so. In fact, what we'll do, if you like the page within the next 10 minutes, I will mention your name on air. Facebook.com/MoranoFan. National Geographic chunk. I just linked to the article. You can read the whole thing for yourself. Chunk of an ancient supercontinent discovered over New Zealand. Excuse me, discovered under New Zealand. This is way cool. The hidden fragment, dating as old as 1.3 billion years, billion with a B, is helping scientists trace the history of the mysterious lost continent of Zealandia. How cool is this? And they have a map in the article of what Zealandia probably looked like. And they quote an author, Keith Kleppes, who is a structural geologist at the University of Vermont. And he says, continents are sort of like icebergs. What you see at the surface is not really the full extent of the beast. I had no idea that this was another continent. But apparently this newfound fragment of ancient rock may be part of the missing piece for Zealandia. So this discovery ticks the final box. They are sitting on a continent. That's really wild. So I would encourage you to read the article. I'm going to work on getting one of these geologists on maybe Monday or Tuesday to talk about this, because I found it really interesting. 800-848-WABC. Let me say hello to Julia in Las Vegas. Hello, Julia.
Hey, Frank. Wow, that Zealandia thing sounds really awesome.
It's really so interesting. It's a lengthy article, so I don't know, and it gets into crystals and all such a thing. I'm not doing it justice. That's why I'm going to try and have an expert on Monday or Tuesday to talk about it. I found it pretty fascinating.
Definitely fascinating. But anyway, I called to offer you a suggestion about buttoning shirts. Unlike you, when I was six, I had such a difficult time buttoning up my shirts. And an uncle of mine noticed that I always had my buttons done incorrectly. And he took me aside and he said, when I was your age, I had the same trouble. I'll give you a little tip. Start from the bottom and go to the top. Now, I have no idea why it worked for me, but it did work. It may not work for everyone, but I just thought I'd let you in on that, and maybe.
Well, that's a good one, Julia. That is actually what my wife has suggested to me, and I still somehow missed that bottom button. I must have been in a hurry.
Huh.
But I will make an effort to use that strategy. Thanks for the call, Julia. Al is in Manhattan. Hello, Al.
Miss Marana, how you doing? You're right.
I'm great. How are you doing? It's Friday. How can I not be great?
I heard the sad news that Gabby left, and I heard that what's his name? I don't know why I can't even say his name now.
Well, exactly. We don't miss him. Good riddance.
No, I do miss him. They ran a great show, and Molly seems to be filling in very nicely.
Yes, and I want to thank Rob Leonard, who's filling in as our engineer tonight, too, as well. I know it's a difficult show to manage at times, and both Molly and Rob have done a terrific job. So my thanks to
both of them. Yeah, but you had a good crew there, I wanted to say, throughout
many months.
A1 Jeff. Listen, as far as the buttons, here's the thing, the way I look at it. I've heard you say over the last couple of years, I've been listening to you, and you're one quirky dude, that's for sure. But my question to you is this. Have you always had problems, or is it only in, like you say, the last 3 years, maybe possibly since you went to night work and all that? That's my question.
I think it's just the last 3 years, because I don't remember people pointing out these button problems to me until recently.
Okay, so here's a couple. Do you mind if I ask you real quick, like three or four questions?
Sure.
Okay, here. Do you find yourself, and I kind of remember this one that you did, you said it a couple times here and there, do you lose your keys quite a bit or just misplace them?
Well, it's been a little while since that was always kind of my move, yes.
Okay, let me ask you this. Do you ever find yourself sitting in a chair thinking, what do I got to do? Just saying to yourself, I got to do this. I got to do that.
Constantly.
What's next?
Constantly.
Constantly. Okay. Do you have attention deficit disorder, would you say?
It's funny. I never thought I did. But my ex-girlfriend, Mallory, she believed that I had I was on the autism spectrum. And okay. I never thought I was, but she made a pretty convincing case that I was. And my then girlfriend, now wife, Rachel, said that she didn't believe that I was on the autism spectrum. She believed that I had ADHD. And there are some similarities between the two. And I looked because, there's a questionnaire for adult autism spectrum disorder, and then there's a questionnaire for adult ADHD. And I do check off a bunch of boxes, but I tend to think Rachel's right that I may have ADHD.
Okay, two real quick last ones. Do you have trouble parking?
A little bit. But you mean parallel or just in general?
In general, do people say, hey, Frank, you're a good parker or you're a lousy parker? I'm a horrible parker. I have attention deficit disorder. And I'm probably going to get Alzheimer's or Lewy body because family members have had it. But what I want to say is this. I had a grandfather. He'd take me upstate. he'd drive, and I would say, how come he never turns that blinker off? Or later on, I would visit him. His water would always be running. So, you know what? A lot of times the body tries to always give you warnings 10 years, 20 years down the line, something coming down the pike. But one of the ways you could tell is spatially parking a car, putting buttons on, is one of the first things to go. And other times, if you ever find yourself, like, starting to nap, you know, naturally, if you're very tired, you're always trying to catch up. But you'll find yourself sometimes your head, like, leaning forward. Almost like, have you ever visited anybody in a nursing home? Do you see, like, a lot of people, they seem like little zombies until the door opens up and they perk up. But they're in a little bit of a state. Sometimes, sad to say, that's like, and I'm not saying it's in your case. You're a brilliant person. Just saying, just be aware that, you know, sometimes it's not just.
Well, so do you think my buttoning problems could be an indication of some sort of Alzheimer's issue?
It's somewhere down the line when you got to realize this. Like I told you last week about sleep. You know, we know very little about it. The more we do know is this: the body doesn't want it. That's number one. So you fight it, but somewhere down the line you got to pay for it. And the way most people pay for it is in the storing of memories, right? And so the day-to-day tasks, you'll always do those over and over again. But then later on, you need this to proceed later on, the fifth, the sixth, seventh, eighth decade of life. So Alzheimer's is a slow-moving thing. I think there's a link to sugar, too. Somehow sugar and how you sleep can sometimes affect you, too. If you're a side sleeper, that's very good because you get amyloid plaques in your head. And when you go left and right, that sometimes washes that away, which is what they're trying to right now target things that will reduce that plaque.
Wow. I
just wanted to know about the buttons. Is just, you know, if you find yourself sitting after work, kind of like dying off and saying, like, what do I got to do next? Did I lose the keys? Did I do that over again? Did I turn the stove off? Just, you know, sometimes those are warnings, you know. But other than that, I want to say the bumper music is great, and you have the best damn show in this damn city.
Well, thank you, Al. Hopefully I'll remember it long enough to I'll have my memory long enough to remember your comments. I want to thank John Slappe and Jean Horan Wagenhofer, or Jean Horan Wagenhofer, for liking the Facebook page. If you'd like to like the Facebook page as well, you could do so, facebook.com/MoranoFan. We'll continue with your calls in just a minute. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. I am really looking forward to talking with John Stossel coming up in the 3 o'clock hour, and we'll have denunciations in the 4 o'clock hour. This is The Other Side of Midnight, straight ahead.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. Hey, if you ever miss any portion of the show, you can listen to the podcast. All you have to do is subscribe at whatever podcast app you use, iTunes, Google Podcasts, whatever, Spotify, you name it. Just search The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, and you can hit the subscribe button, and this podcast will automatically be downloaded to your phone each and every morning. If you have iTunes, I would certainly appreciate it if, in addition to subscribing, you would leave a nice 5-star review. That right now we have an average rating of 4.9 stars, so we're trying to bump that up even closer to 5, and leave a nice comment. Several of you have left nice comments. Got Leanne Colacurdo, Chris Nothing, May Lawton, a whole bunch of other people have less nice podcasts. But if you want to know what you can do to help the show, obviously the first thing you could do is listen. Second thing you could do is patronize our advertisers. The third thing you can do is subscribe to the podcast and leave a nice review. If you don't have any of these podcast apps, just go to fmwabc.com. That's fmwabc.com. And we do appreciate those of you that follow the Facebook page. Want to welcome aboard Jennifer Lorig Marino. And if you follow the Facebook page or want to follow the Facebook page, you can do so by going to facebook.com/MoranoFan. Our social media footprint growing slowly but surely every day. We're on Twitter as well, at Frank Morano. That's Frank, M-O-R-A-N-O. And even on Instagram, which I occasionally will call, more than occasionally, I call Instantgram, at Morano Vision. That's M-O-R-A-N-O. Vision. All right, back to the phones we go. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Carol is in New Jersey. Hello, Carol.
Hi there, Frank. May I ask you a question?
You may.
Okay. Who are some of your favorite musicians? I'm curious.
Well, in terms, I obviously really like Frank Sinatra. I really like Johnny Mathis. I like Johnny Cash. I like Elvis. And I really enjoy a lot of Rolling Stones songs. I like the Beatles.
Yes,
in terms of bands that are around these days, I really like a band called Fitz and the Tantrums. I think they're very, very good, very talented.
No, I've never heard of them.
I play some of their music from time to time. They have a few good songs. I actually, in terms of female singers, really enjoy Christina Aguilera. I think she is really talented. And someone who I think has an incredible voice. And I only know a few of her songs, but there's a female singer called Maya. She's one the female voice in Ghetto Superstar, and she is also in that song, the remake or the cover of Lady Marmalade with Christina Aguilera and Lil
Right,
Kim.
Right.
I think just an incredible voice.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, I'm partial to the British singers.
Yes, I know you love Joe Jackson. We're working on getting him on the show.
Well, I'm supposed to be related to him, so. But you know who I think is very underrated, and I always thought he was really good? Neil Tennant from the Pet Shop Boys.
Well, I like the Pet Shop Boys. And since you mentioned that, it does remind me of both Neil Sedaka and Neil Diamond, who I both I enjoy both of them, and Eric Burdon from all the bands that he's been involved in, whether it's War, whether it's Animals. I'm a big fan of Eric Burdon as well.
Right.
And I like Bobby Rydell, too. I think Bobby Rydell is actually going to be on with Cousin Brucey this weekend.
No, I think he's going to be on with Tony Orlando.
Oh, I think you're right, actually. I misread my notes. He is going to be on with Tony Orlando. I'm glad we have you here to straighten me out, Carol. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Carol. Yeah, I actually, you know, everyone talks about Dean Martin, and deservedly so, but that Bobby Rydell version of Volare, I would hold that up to any version of Volare anywhere in America, anywhere in the world. And he's a great singer, great singer. Let me say hello to Larry in Brooklyn. Hello, Larry. Larry, I got you? Larry? Okay, moving on. 800-848-WABC. Joe in Howard Beach. Hello, Joe.
Oh, Frank, how are you?
I'm well, Joe. How you holding up?
Okay. I was listening to a show the other night about John Gotti Jr. and his father.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a couple of cameos in there?
Yes, I'm in that documentary, actually.
Yeah, I saw it, and I said, that's Frank from The Night Show, you know. Yeah, I said, that's Frank, you know, Morano from The Night Show. And they showed you a couple of times, yeah.
How did I do? What was your review, Joe?
No, it was very short, you know. They put down talk show host, you know. And You see, I still live over here, and I see them all the time, you know?
Yeah, well, Howard Beach is a great neighborhood. I certainly see them all the time as well. And for people that really want to know the story about the Gottis, that is probably the best documentary. And thanks for the call, Joe. That's probably the best documentary that you can watch. It's called Gotti, Godfather and Son. And John Gotti Jr. is in it. He's interviewed. He participates fully. But if anyone thinks it's a love letter to the mob, it's not. It's not. There's FBI people interviewed in it. There's journalists interviewed in it. There's judges interviewed in it. There's cops interviewed in it. So I think it's incredibly fair and pretty accurate. It's called Gotti, Godfather and Son. They replay it on A&E all the time, and I think it's quite good. I want to thank John Vaughn for liking the Facebook page at facebook.com/MoranoFan. That's facebook.com/MoranoFan. John Stossel joining me next hour. I'm very much looking forward to that conversation. And you know what I'd want to cover next? And the reason we're doing denunciations in the 4 o'clock hour so I have more time to talk to John Stossel next hour, and I don't want to rush through denunciations, but what I would like your take on is the story that I mentioned yesterday, and I thought I was going to have more of an opportunity to get into it with Chuck Darrow, but we ended up talking casinos. This decision by the Atlantic City City Council to do away and shut down their only needle exchange facility is pretty controversial. A council member claims he was beaten up over it. And the governor, and remember, the state of New Jersey still controls Atlantic City. They don't have local control. The governor is lambasting them for shutting down this needle exchange program. So I'd love to hear from you, particularly if you're someone that has had a problem with drugs in the past. Forget about Atlantic City, because there's one in Camden as well, and there are other needle exchange programs elsewhere, and they want to put them in more places. What is your opinion of needle exchange programs? Should there be places where you could go and get clean needles to shoot up intravenous drugs? I'll give you my take, but I'd love to hear yours. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Until next hour, keep asking questions.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
Even though it's not Thursday, we can still mention a couple of things happening in Atlantic City, because Atlantic City is just the latest place to shut down its needle exchange amidst a deadly rise in U.S. overdose deaths. Now, this move, very controversial, comes as overdose deaths have jumped nearly 30% nationwide. And HIV outbreaks have been reported among people who use injection drugs. So I want to hear from you. What do you think about communities having needle exchange programs? 1-800-848-WABC. Look, to me, the answer is pretty obvious. If you live in a community, you absolutely do not want one of these needle exchange facilities, whatever they call it. They call it a harm reduction facility. You absolutely do not want one of these harm reduction facilities in your neighborhood, because, I mean, it's basically a magnet for drug addicts. George Tibbett, who's been on the show, who's the president of the Atlantic City City Council, held up a bag full of needles that he picked up from a park, public park. Kids could use it. So that being said, a lot of the people who are advocates for drug addicts say that this is going to lead to greater HIV transmission, more people dying of drug overdoses and a much more dangerous drug experience. What say you? Because they have them elsewhere. Camden as well. So Atlantic City lawmakers voted to close down the tourist town's 14-year-old needle exchange site Wednesday, raising fears of a coming health crisis amidst HIV outbreaks and skyrocketing overdose deaths. It's going to be devastating for people. It's already devastating. That's according to Carol Harney, who heads the needle exchange site in Atlantic City, which is called Oasis. Now, I got to tell you, just selfishly, I'm thrilled about this because I hang out two blocks from where this needle exchange program is. I'd like to buy a house, you know, a second house in this town one day. And the last thing I want is to walk around with my wife. There's a Politico article by Sam Sutton describing a guy, you know, clearly out of it, clearly high on something, just right on the street, walking around with his pants around his ankles and all these sores on his legs. So the last thing I want to do is walk around with my wife and future child through a parade full of or a caravan full of drug addicts who are coming there because they can get safe needles. But it's easy for me to say. The people who are advocates for the addicted and HIV advocates say these harm reduction centers are important. And one of them is Phil Murphy. Phil Murphy's been all about expanding these harm reduction centers around the state. So I'd love to hear from you and your take on this. Is it good? So this is one of those things Warner Wolf used to say about stadiums when they'd be discussed in Queens and elsewhere, or in Manhattan and elsewhere. It's great if you don't live there. And that's the way I kind of feel about needle exchange programs. Clearly, there's a value to these harm reduction centers, but you would never want to live near one. You'd never want to visit a town that had them. 800-848-WABC, give me your take. So Oasis is one of only seven so-called harm reduction sites and the largest in the state of New Jersey, providing clean needles, health screenings, overdose prevention drugs, addiction treatment, and other medical services to people who use drugs and people in recovery. See, the other part of this story here, and I can't speak for the other six, but they came to kind of an agreement. They said, all right, let's keep Oasis, but let's move it out of the center of town. Let's move it to the outskirts so that families don't encounter it, so the commercial businesses don't encounter it. And then that's where they're going to put the supermarket. And they don't want this needle exchange facility right next to a brand new supermarket. So all of a sudden they said, no, forget about moving it. Let's just get rid of it. So this is a decision that more and more communities are going to be faced with around the country because HIV is up. Drug overdose deaths are up. Drug overdoses killed more than 93,000 people in the United States last year. That is a record high number of deaths. And this was after a couple of years where it had dipped a little. Now, 93,000, you want to know how much that is? In 1 year. That is more people than died in the entire Vietnam War. That is more people than died at the height of the AIDS epidemic. And 93,000 Americans dead last year due to drugs. So we're now seeing these HIV outbreaks in West Virginia, in Boston. And in this lengthy 3-hour Atlantic City hearing, public health advocates and people in recovery testified that closing Oasis would inevitably lead to more overdoses and more deaths. So help me out here. How do you balance this? How do you balance the need to treat people who are addicted with the fact that nobody wants a gaggle of addicts in their neighborhood? How do you balance that? 800-848-9222. And the statistics do show some serious progress. For instance, needle exchanges have been shown to limit HIV outbreaks by 50%, according to the CDC. And they're a gateway to better health care. They provide overdose prevention medication. They provide addiction recovery services. So I don't know how you balance this. I would have voted to get rid of it because this is a tourist community and it's a place where people live. And I don't think it's what you want. And what I've seen, just anecdotally, is that because it's the only one in Atlantic County, you see addicts from all over South Jersey head down to Cape May just because they know they can get these clean needles. So give me your two cents, 800-848-9222, because this particular program now has 50 days to end its syringe services program. Now, Phil Murphy has the authority to halt the decision, and he may, but we'll see what happens. Steve is in Manhattan. Hello, Steve.
You count on Phil Murphy. He's a flake. All right, Big Frank, and why don't they put a Phoenix house next to the needle exchange thing? But before I get to the meat of this call, if they ever bring back Beavis and Butthead, Bongo Mike.
Oh, stop. Parts. Don't bash the other callers.
They've been doing this for years to me. I never complained about it. Anyway, listen, first of all, drugs have been a scourge on this country for the last 50 years. I just mentioned Phoenix House. People would complain about them building that next door to someone's in neighborhoods. Drug users come in. Then you have the needle exchange. Drug users come in. I'm a main proponent of really trying to treat people who have drug problems and stuff. I've met so many people through the years whose lives are destroyed and flattened out. They died from the drugs. People today sort of take a light look at drugs. Marijuana, they don't even test for it in most places anymore because so many people use it. But I really believe drugs is a scourge. I know Trump 3 years ago, 2 years ago, let about 4,000 felons out of the pen. A lot of them are drug dealers. Folks, these drug dealers wouldn't think twice about selling drugs to your young kids, 11, 12, 13 years old, and giving it to them for free to get them hooked on it, okay? I know Tim Cotton, senator from Arkansas, was against this. I was against it. Anybody with any open-mind, level-headed person would be against it. But the thing is, let's get treatment centers. Let's get the people out there. They should not be in neighborhoods. They shouldn't be around kids. Of course, it's people. Who's going to go there? You wouldn't have tourists anymore there if you have people in there looking to exchange needles or looking to buy drugs. These people need help, and we're going to have to try to get it for them. And a lot of them, unfortunately, don't want any help, and they don't have any family members to help them.
Well, so, Steve, keeping in mind just the serious aspects of your call, and I thought you raised a lot of good points. Keeping in mind what you just said, right, that you don't want these in your neighborhood, these needle exchange facilities, and keeping in mind that there are addicts that need help, what do you do? Where do you put these facilities, if you have them at all?
I believe there's plenty. This country is so big. We have plenty of land here to build faculties for places for people who want treatment, and we can do it. That could be done, but they have to want the treatment. And we have to stop glorifying drugs in this country. But this is a serious problem. Young people are getting hooked on all these different type of drugs today. And if we don't address this problem, it's only going to get worse. But, Frank, there's plenty of places we can put it. There's places upstate where you have tracts of land. If they want the treatment, we should give it to them. But they have to have it. But we got to remember, too, family members disown these people. They don't even want to help them anymore.
I know. Look, I've seen a lot of and thank you for the call, Steve. I've seen a lot of families struggle because of people's issues with drugs. You know, when you have an addict in your family, it's not just something that's one person's problem. It's a whole family's problem. They all have to deal with it. 800-848-9222. I want to thank Brian Berger for following us on Facebook, facebook.com/MoranoFan. I went to junior high school with a young man named Brian Bergen, and occasionally when he would call my house, my mother would refer to him as Brian Berger. So it was nice to have meet the real Brian Berger. Andrea is in Sussex County. Hello, Andrea.
Good morning, Frank. I have a bit of a cold, sorry. In listening to you, if Governor Murphy is so enthralled with this idea and the state wants to run it, they need to own it. And it needs to be in a state building, like maybe the municipal hall area down there in Atlantic City. I'm not familiar with Atlantic City, but it needs governmental control. It also needs to be close to, I would think, a police station in case something occurs at this site, because it's not going to be pretty at all. And if the state wants it, they need to own it, and it needs to be in a state building. That's it. Period. Done.
Thank you, Andrea. 1-800-848-9222. I'll tell you one thing that is not addictive, but it certainly is habit-forming. That's Life Change Tea. If you've not tried this yet, I don't know what you're waiting for. If you are interested in more energy, try Life Change Tea. I have not had any coffee since Monday morning at 5 a.m., and I am ready to run through a brick wall. I've got so much energy. I am having some of the most sound eliminations of my entire life. And I owe it all to Life Change Tea. Life Change Tea is all natural, all herbal. It's organic, no GMOs. It's no fillers, no chemical garbage. It's all natural. It's great. It cleanses you from the inside out. That's why they call it the tea that makes you go. It's essentially a daily detox. So if you haven't tried it yet, please do so. Go to the website, getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com, and use the promo code Frank. If you do, you will get to enjoy free shipping anywhere in these United States. That's getthetea.com, promo code Frank. We're going to chat with John Stossel in just about 10 minutes. Very much looking forward to that conversation. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
Everybody, this is The Other Side of Midnight on 77 WABC. I'm Frank Morano. For half a century, maybe more, there have been two words that when used together and in succession cause people to stand up and take notice. If you were a business owner ripping off consumers or a government wasting money, they caused you to panic. But if you were a television viewer interested in a different perspective than what the rest of the 9,000 other channels are covering, they caused you to turn up the volume on your television set and pay attention. Those two words, John Stossel. John Stossel is a 19-time Emmy Award winner. He's won 5 awards from the National Press Club. He's also the best-selling author of 3 books. He's had an incredible career at a bunch of different media outlets, including ABC News and Fox Business. But now he's branched out on his own, and he's reaching a whole new audience on the internet. And I'm thrilled that he's able to join me this morning on the radio. Mr. Stossel, good morning. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you, Frank. Boy, so, for a while there, it sounded like I was dead already. But well, I'm glad you mentioned the new videos.
I'm just going to play that back if I should outlive you. But at the rate that you seem to be aging, that seems unlikely. Because you look the same now as when you did when I first started watching you decades ago.
It is freaky, but I'm aging slowly.
Yeah, there's a portrait of Dorian Stossel in your attic somewhere. I'm convinced of it. Now, I want to talk to you about some of the stories that you've been covering on johnstossel.com, both in the column that you've been putting up on there and in these terrific videos that you have up there. But for people that are used to seeing you on ABC News and on Fox Business over the years and might be unfamiliar with this new venture, explain your decision to leave Fox Business. You had one of the top-rated shows on Fox Business. I think you were the first show on Fox Business to actually beat CNBC. That was when Fox Business was in its infancy and only in a handful of the homes that CNBC was in. Why would you leave a big national network like Fox Business just to do things on the internet? Explain to folks your decision.
3 reasons, really. One, I want to reach young people. I've become a born-again free marketer, and I think that's the way to save the world and help poor people, and I want to do that full-time and reach people whose minds aren't made up. Fox's audience, I think some of them are already dead, but Nielsen hasn't figured out that
they
just kept the TV on. And my son said, look, you got 1 million Twitter followers. There's this thing called the internet now. You don't need a network. Plus, Fox was starting to become all Trump all the time, and I just wasn't that interested in that. So I raised some money, and I'm still raising money from viewers, and we reach 2.4 million people a week. I just make a five-minute video, which is what I had done on all my career, editing things. Most of cable TV is just yammer. To actually research things and talk to both sides and play them off against each other, Fox didn't want that. So I'm doing it now and reaching 2.4 million per video, which is more than I was getting at Fox Business.
So aside from the sheer numbers, what's been the response like from the new audiences that you've been trying to reach? Do you get the sense that you're winning people over? Do you get the sense that you're winning over new viewers? And ultimately, it's going to have to be a commercial successful venture for you. Are you making money with this?
We are making money, but only because some people give me money. Some viewers like it and send in a check. We're reaching people. Are we convincing people? I don't know. I can barely convince my wife. So many people are programmed whenever there's a problem to say there ought to be a law. Intuitively, people want government to step in. And if I look at the comments, we get a lot of people cheering me on, but a lot of skeptics too. It's a good discussion that continues.
That's on with John Stossel. You could check out some of these videos at johnstossel.com. The thing that amazes me about all the videos that you post each week, and I've become a big fan and a subscriber, is how effectively you're able to tell a story in 5 minutes. Sometimes I feel like I have difficulty even saying hello and my name in 5 minutes. You are able to explain a story, hear from multiple people, give some background on it. I mean, the fact that you're able to tell a story in 5 minutes is something that I think is lost not only on cable news, but to tell a story so thoroughly, it's lost on a lot of folks that work on broadcast network news.
Each is edited about 10 times before we put it out, and some are 6 minutes, but I have a short attention span. I don't want to sit through a lot of blather. I want to cut it down to the essence. On the other hand, we ran 2 hours with Edward Snowden and an hour with Crowder of Louder with Crowder, so sometimes we go longer.
Talking with John Stossel, you had this great video about the Southern Poverty Law Center. Now, this is a group that supposedly identifies hate groups. They have always had a pretty good reputation. They're quoted in all sorts of mainstream news organizations. And once they tar someone or some group as a hate group, it becomes very difficult for that person or that group to get mainstream credibility and certainly to raise money from mainstream audiences. But in this video, you indicate that the Southern Poverty Law Center may not be what they appear to be. Why? Why are they not all they're cracked up to be?
They had become a hate group themselves. They were just hating anybody on the right and using that to make money. They had become a money-making machine. And since the video came out, they have had the shuffle their leadership. But you're right, they still have that reputation. Oh, we're stopping hate. Well, they call Christian groups who don't approve of homosexuality, which I think is just fine, but religious groups are entitled to their beliefs. They call that a hate group, and that's not right.
And you actually talk about how certain groups that are identified as hate groups by the Southern Poverty Law Center actually become targets for, and in some cases, targets for violent people themselves.
Yeah, there was one case of the angry, violent person who came in with a gun and shot a security guard. But, you know, I don't want to criticize the media's cherry picking of the horrible example and portraying it as the norm. So I don't want to do that here. That did happen, and these groups do lose money. It's rare that somebody shoots them.
Well, that's thankfully true. You also write a regular column on johnstossel.com, and you have a column there this week all about breaking rules and innovation. This week, the whole world was transfixed on Jeff Bezos and his trip to space. Last week, it was Richard Branson. A lot of people also following Elon Musk and SpaceX, a battle of the billionaires for the space age. You talk about how, in your judgment, breaking rules has led to incredible amounts of innovation. Explain to folks why that's the case.
You have to break the rules today if you want to do anything new. And this is no individual's fault, but if you're a government bureaucrat, you think you're not doing your job unless you're passing another rule. And over time, it's just encrusted with bureaucracy. So you can't do stuff. And, I don't know, Bezos broke rules. He's somewhat of an opportunist who probably tries to suck up to the government. But Musk, when he was told by NASA, you can't launch, did it anyway. He broke rules making Tesla the success it is. And thank God there are a few rich, gutsy people willing to buck the bureaucrats because some of their rules are ridiculous. I mean, look at the SEC. You have to issue a prospectus if you're going to try to raise money. The prospectus is now so long that nobody reads it. What good does that do? Look at these forms that you click on the Internet. I agree. I have read this, and I agree to everything in there. Nobody reads it. Same thing when you go to the doctor, they give you the stuff to sign. Years ago, some lawyer filed a lawsuit over something, and then the lawyers at the hospital say, oh, we better cover our ass with all this paperwork. It doesn't even really protect them, but it lays down an extra burden on all of us, and I'm off point. The main point is that look at Uber and Lyft. They're pretty terrific. A lot of us like them. They couldn't have gotten away with it if they obeyed the rules. So they didn't ask permission. They just put the app out. And by the time de Blasio and other idiot politicians were about to crush them, they had enough customers that they could fight back. They put it on their app. Here's what Manhattan will look like if de Blasio gets his way, and de Blasio was forced to back down. But if you want to build a chemical plant or a nuclear plant, you can't just sneak it out like Uber and Lyft did. That kind of innovation is just about stopped.
Well, so if you embrace that philosophy that breaking rules hinders innovation and it denies new opportunities to entrepreneurs, isn't that philosophy potentially dangerous? I mean, couldn't it potentially lead to even broader law breaking, things like selling contraband substances, for instance?
Well, why are they contraband? Marijuana was contraband for a long time. But yes, certainly we need some rules, but we've got zillions of rules. Almost everybody who is active in life breaks a couple every day. And I think you had a double negative in your question. It's you need to break rules to innovate is often true. And if we got rid of most of the rules and just came down to the basic rules, you can't kill people or hurt people or take their stuff, we'd have a better country and more freedom and more happiness.
I was really interested in, not only because I thought it was right on the money, but it caused me to chuckle, a recent video you did on the new language of the day. I had to break the news to my mother that she was no longer my mother, but she was actually my birthing person. How crazy has life gotten with these new language, this encouragement to use different forms of language for traditional terms?
It's pretty crazy and stupid, and yet people are fearful of being called racist on Twitter, and they go along with it. Birthing People was a hearing about inequalities in healthcare, and I don't know why Congress needs a hearing about that. There are obviously inequalities, but the fact that almost every congressperson at the hearing didn't say mother, said birthing person so obsequiously is upsetting. Because some of the language really matters. Like now, words can be violence. We're told to call a transgender woman a man on the street is an act of violence. But that means that the best way to resolve disputes by arguing about them goes out the window, because someone might be offended or have their feelings hurt, and then we're not supposed to say those things. But it was saying those things that opened up life to gay relationships and gay marriage and legalization of, say, marijuana and alternative families. And we got to be able to talk about these things to make changes.
The way that you get your videos out there now is through the internet. We've heard so much, but especially so much over the last year or two about internet censorship. YouTube has been flagging certain videos, Facebook and Twitter. They've been taking down messages, including on things like the lab leak theory for COVID, which is now becoming increasingly accepted as the most likely scenario. I'm curious. You love to challenge standard orthodoxy in politics and in journalism. Have you been, from what you've been able to observe, the victim of big tech censorship yourself with this new venture?
Yeah. And look, fine, if they want to put some warning, this is controversial, or you might want to check the other side. But Facebook just has basically not cut me off, but vastly reduced my reach. I did one video that was skeptical of climate change being a total crisis for the world that we have to turn everything upside down to try to pretend to fix, and interviewed three scientists who argued that and pointed out that no one would debate them. It was viewed 24 million times on Facebook, 1 million time on YouTube. But Facebook has assigned a group based in France to be their scientific censors. And when these groups, when this group of climate zealots decided that there were parts of my video that they didn't think were in context, or there was other information that I left out, well, duh, it's a short TV video. I leave out a lot of information. They complained to Facebook, and Facebook automatically cuts my reach. So now, where I used to get millions of people on Facebook and several hundred thousand on YouTube, now I'm getting more views on YouTube because I'm down to down many millions on Facebook. So I'm furious. It really attacks my business model.
Yeah, no, I mean, clearly you go to the internet for greater freedom in getting your message out, only to get clamped down by a whole different type of corporate censorship. You wonder, where can you go next? It's really disconcerting. If you had to pick, and you're somebody that's spent decades in journalism at the local level, at the national level, if you had to pick the biggest problem in journalism today, you identified specifically the problem with cable news, people already having their mind made up in order to watch pundits that are essentially just yammering about their opinion, which is reinforcing the viewer's opinion. But broader journalism, the New York Times, CBS News, ABC News, the Washington Post, etc. What would you say the biggest problem or problems with journalism are today?
Well, those four examples you give, I would say that there's silly lefties who just want to push their silly point of view. But in a broader way, I noticed that nobody wants to argue with the other side. And I understand on cable it doesn't rate well because you just get screaming. So I edit my videos so I can just take fact. Was this true? And let the other side respond and you can digest it. But even at Fox, when I wanted to argue a liberal cause with Sean Hannity or Bill O'Reilly, like something like drug legalization or letting in more immigrants legally so people, so criminals wouldn't sneak in, they didn't really want to debate me. They wanted to have either people on that they could just totally mock, or they wanted people who agree with them.
Well, trust me,
nobody takes time to do any research anymore, and nobody talks to the other side or presents their point of view.
Having seen you debate others, I wouldn't want to debate you either. You have to know you have to know what you're getting into. It's clear with the books that you've written and with the segments that you've done on TV over the years, and clearly what you're doing now on johnstossel.com, that you have a pretty strong libertarian philosophy. I think you've actually inspired a lot of people to explore ideas related to libertarianism. Were you always a libertarian, or did that grow? And if so, what led to the evolution of your current political leanings?
I was not always a libertarian. I was a liberal, like most young journalists, and I've been taught by my college professors that government programs could fix all our problems. And I became a consumer reporter, and I criticized business and called for regulation of business. And only gradually over 10, 15 years did I watch that regulation make things worse. It enriched lawyers. It meant you had to fill out more paperwork to do anything. It didn't help. What helped was competition. If there was another choice and they advertised, we're better than choice A, that protected consumers much better than government ever could. And I started reading more. I discovered Reason magazine, the libertarian magazine, and it was an epiphany. Oh, my God, there's a whole new way of, whole different, not new, whole different way of thinking about this. It's not new. Thomas Jefferson said, I think, government that governs least governs best. And that's still true. And it's just hard to live in a place that practices that, because nobody goes into politics to do less. And no kid goes on a tour of Albany and meets the state legislator and says, what laws have you repealed? It's all, what laws have you passed? So it's the natural progress of things for government to grow and liberty to yield.
It's no secret that electorally the libertarians have had a tough time gaining a foothold in American politics. Both libertarians that have run within the major parties like Ron and Rand Paul, they seem kind of capped at 5, 6, maybe 10%. And in the general election, libertarians that run tend to be capped at most 3%. You have this massive following. You have the kind of name recognition that most politicians would only dream of. Do you ever think that because you are so interested in promoting the cause of libertarianism that you might step into the electoral arena, if only to expose more people to these ideas?
I would like to expose more people, but no, I wouldn't be good at that. I have no patience. I'd snap at people. And I leave that to others. It's kind of a two-party country. And we do have some Democrats who have some libertarian ideas and a few more Republicans who do. And Rand Paul gets more than 50% of the vote in his state, and he's pretty libertarian.
John Stossel, you're doing terrific work in my judgment. If people haven't checked out the videos that that you've been producing at johnstossel.com, I certainly hope they will. And I hope we can chat again in the future.
Thanks, Frank. And you obviously have great judgment.
If you want to comment on any portion of my conversation with John Stossel, you're welcome to give me a call. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Don't let the fact that you may disagree with John's evaluation of my judgment affect your evaluation of the videos he's producing. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno. If you want to comment, you can do so at 800-848-WABC. Hey, I want to thank Janice Brodo. I'm not sure Brodo's her proper name. I know her longtime companion is Tom Brodo, but Janice is always very elusive. Oh, Janice Grossman. I want to thank Janice Grossman for informing me that Lionel is actually performing on August 21st, not August 7th. So we have to see. I don't know why I thought it was August 7th. Maybe it was originally August 7th, but lest anyone planning to go to the Cutting Room on the 7th, don't go then. If you want to see Lionel, go on August 21st. So there you have it. 800-848-WABC if you want to comment on any of the stories that we're covering. And coming up next hour, we got a bunch of fun stuff that'll come here. Oh, we're going to do denunciations in the 4 o'clock hour. That's certainly going to be fun. There's a lot of people who, believe me, have a denunciation coming to them. And I am stretching, as we say, in preparation of denunciations. So this interesting article. Headline, Why Everyone Has the Worst Summer Cold Ever. And this is pretty much what I've been seeing. But it says, and it's an article by Tara Parker Pope. It's in the New York Times. Yes, the summer cold and cough season really is worse than usual. And she quotes a woman who says, I've had bad colds, but I've never experienced a virus like this, who's been suffering from congestion, clogged ears, and a raspy throat for about 2 weeks. Months of pandemic restrictions aimed at COVID-19 have the unintended but welcome effect of stopping flu, cold, and other viruses from spreading. But now that masks are off and social gatherings, hugs, and handshakes are back, the run-of-the-mill viruses that cause drippy noses, stuffy heads, coughs, and sneezes have also returned with a vengeance. So it's very interesting. They say that our immune system, infectious disease experts say that there are a whole bunch of factors fueling this, what they're calling a hot, sneezy summer. So while the pandemic lockdowns protected people from COVID, our immune systems missed the daily workout of being exposed to a multitude of microbes back when we commuted on subways, spent time at the office, gathered with friends, and sent children to daycare and school. And so although your immune system is likely as strong as it always was, if it hasn't been alerted to a microbial intruder in a while, it may take a bit longer to get revved up when challenged by a pathogen again, according to the experts. And while some viral exposures in our past have conferred lasting immunity, other illnesses may have given us only transient immunity that waned as we were isolating at home. So the CDC says that cases of common respiratory viruses are on the rise big time this summer. So there you have it. If you want to know why your summer cold is worse than it usually is, apparently it's because you have been locked down for the last year, and so have your family members. There you have it. So, all right. Hey, there was one story which I found pretty interesting, and it deals with a couple of things that I'm certainly always interested in following, and that has to do with baseball and relationships and religion. So it's actually three things that I'm actually interested in following. So there's a ball player for the Chicago Cubs. His name is Ben Zobrist. And I believe he's a second baseman. And he's a former second baseman for the Chicago Cubs. I'm not sure if he's even still in baseball right now. But you had they're getting a divorce, Ben Zobrist and his wife. And according to the documents, I'm always reluctant to comment on anyone else's divorce, even public figures, because I know this is a painful thing for them. And what do they need jerks like me commenting on the radio about it for? But I think this is so unusual and so interesting, it actually calls for me to mention it. So there was a $30,000 party thrown by the wife of this ball player, Ben Zobrist, and in court documents obtained by the Chicago Tribune, the 40-year-old Zobrist said that the genesis of his ongoing divorce proceedings was a retirement party his wife, Christian pop singer Juliana Zobrist, threw for their pastor, Byron Yon in December of 2018. So according to Ben, and again, I'm sure she has a different side to the story, but according to Ben, his wife spent $30,000 on that party. Woo! A party that was held at their farm. And at that party, Juliana, that's the wife, and Yon, that's the pastor, allegedly both were intoxicated and were dancing on each other in a provocative way that was very embarrassing to Ben, especially in front of their close church friends. Quote, wife took umbrage at her husband's rebuking her privately after the party for acting in this manner in public, the court filing said. However, unknown to husband, wife was already in love with Pastor Yon. Juliana apparently, allegedly, I should say, bought a burner phone to talk to Yum and said she reached out to him in pursuit of advice. Eventually, Yon, the very same pastor that she threw the party for and that was dancing on in a provocative manner, gave the couple counseling. Let's count the problems that are going on in this relationship. My goodness. Wife reached out to her pastor, Byron Yon, and found solace in his support. It's according to her filing. The parties had a friendship with Mr. Yon and his family. Wife's friendship and connection with Mr. Yon grew over a period of time and changed into a romantic relationship. In March of 2019, wife had an affair with Mr. Yon and admitted this relationship to husband in May of 2019, although she did not admit the adultery until later. So the couple filed for divorce in May of 2019 after 14 years of marriage, and they're going to go to trial in August. So Ben evidently has taken a leave of absence from the Cubs during these marital issues. This leave of absence, just did a little back of the envelope math here, has resulted in him losing $7.5 million of his $12 million salary. So during this time, the couple attended marriage therapy, where Juliana apparently coaxed Ben to return to the Cubs and earn the remainder of his salary. Yeah, because she wants to get paid. You know what that's about. Juliana claimed her ex-husband basically gave up turning down income when he took his leave. She's seeking an even split of their assets and an additional $4 million. Excuse me? What? And again, I don't want to be one of these people that always takes the guy's side in a divorce proceeding, but this is outrageous. She makes a spectacle of herself at this party, gets drunk, throws herself all over this pastor, who, for all we know, she was already sleeping with him. And then the poor husband, Ben Zobrist, speaks with her privately. She takes umbrage with that and then starts openly banging the pastor. And now she wants half his assets plus $4 million? She cheats on him and she wants half his money that he's worked his whole life developing a skill for in a profession that one-tenth of 1% of human beings could make a living in, let alone make millions of dollars in. And she wants half his assets plus $4 million? No, no, no. So the 2016 World Series MVP has other plans in mind. He's suing this pastor, who's currently the CEO of the Nashville consulting firm Forrest Crane and Company, for emotional distress and allegedly defrauding his charity. So there you have it. Look, it's I obviously always sad when any relationship comes to an end, particularly a marriage. But this is not a woman that deserves millions of dollars. This is a woman who carried on like a trollop. Again, it's easy for me to make judgments in a relationship that I'm not in, and I don't like to be judgmental. And now she wants millions of dollars. To me, this is just reprehensible. 800-848-9222. Hey, we're going to do denunciations next hour after 77 seconds of news from Molly, who's doing a great job as far as I can tell. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Coming up next hour, we've got a whole bunch of interesting things, including denunciations and your calls, 1-800-848-WABC. Until next hour, in the words of the great Bob Grant, your influence counts, so make sure you use it.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno. I'm not tired yet. I think I've discovered the secret to maintaining high energy levels on this show. I mean, maybe the life change tea plays a role, but I haven't had any coffee. I think it's napping on the subway on the way here. And that's why I really wish I had. And I was in an area better served by mass transit so that I could take the express bus here, sleep on the express bus, rather than have to stay awake for this, for the commute here usually. But it was nice to be able to take the subway from Coney Island yesterday, taking you until 5 o'clock this morning, where you'll get to hear the WABC early news with Jet Set Juliet Huddy and me. But meantime, it's Friday, so that means I need to call shenanigans where they need to be called. I need to reproach those in society, those of you out there that have done something worthy of reproachment, because it is time. It's our weekly appointment for
The Other Side of Midnight presents Denunciations.
Ah, yes. Let me first begin with Ben and Jerry's ice cream. Ben and Jerry's, I'm sure by now you've heard about this. It has announced that they are not going to be selling ice cream in the occupied Palestinian territory. This is absolutely crazy. Now, look. If you don't like what Israel's doing in the occupied territories, I get that. But all of a sudden, you are now inviting scrutiny of all the places where you do sell ice cream. So are you still going to sell ice cream in Cuba? How about in China? How about in any of the other authoritarian regimes that exist anywhere in the world? The only place in the world that you're not going to sell ice cream is the so-called occupied Palestinian territory. This is ridiculous. I always thought Ben & Jerry's was a little overrated anyway, I'll be honest. They have some flavors that are interesting. I had Ben & Jerry's when I was in Las Vegas most recently. And no, actually, I had it in Cape May, I think. It was not my decision to go there. But other people wanted to go. I went along for the ride. And big thank you to my friend Rachel's friend Jenna. My wife Rachel's friend Jenna. Her husband Rich actually paid for Ben & Jerry's that night. But now for them to only single out the Palestinian territory, this is a joke. This is a total joke. It smacks of opportunism. It smacks of hypocrisy. It smacks a little bit of anti-Semitism. And I really think Ben and Jerry's ought to be ashamed of themselves here. I want to denounce Assemblymember Latrice Walker. She is the chairperson of the Elections Committee in the New York State Assembly. First of all, I thought there was a very unfair article about her in the New York Post. And they kind of tried to allege that, oh, she has got all these relatives working at the Board of Elections. Well, I got news for you. So does every politician. That's who's working at the Board of Elections. But the people they cited, many in many cases, hadn't worked there in years, weren't related to her and were basically working temporary jobs. In one case, for $25,000 a year. I mean, it's not as if she plugged in her friends to these lucrative six-figure jobs. So I thought that article was pretty unfair. But that has nothing to do with why I'm denouncing her. I am the godfather of ranked choice voting in this city. I have been lobbying for ranked choice voting since 2002. I was head of two political parties that put that in their platform, that questioned candidates about it, that I lobbied to get it on the ballot. I urged broader use of it than was ultimately selected. And yet, Latrice Walker holds a hearing this past week, on Monday, last Monday, on ranked choice voting and what went wrong. And she invites all these people to take a dump on ranked choice voting. And she saves the last panel for a couple of good government groups on ranked choice voting. This was an invitation-only hearing. You know who wasn't invited to this? Me. Me. I was not invited to this in spite of the fact that I take the slings and arrows on ranked choice voting 6 days a week. This woman, she wants to have a pretense of an honest hearing and not even invite me to speak on behalf of ranked choice voting. To paraphrase, to quote John Stossel, give me a break. Assemblywoman Latrice Walker, I do denounce you. I want to denounce the people who beat up this woman in a walker on a Harlem street. This is terrible. A 61-year-old woman was pummeled by four criminals yesterday using fists, feet, and a metal pot. And they bashed this disabled woman, robbed her of her cash, stole her walker. Now, I would love to know what kind of a degenerate you have to be to not only rob a woman in a walker, but to beat her up and then steal her walker. I am so sincere that there is a special place in hell for these four people. And, you know, I'm sure if they're ever caught, and that's, we're not big on catching criminals now. If we do catch them, we just release. But I am sure if these people are ever caught, they're going to have every excuse in the world as to why they did this. This one's on drugs. This one's mentally ill. This one's homeless and has no money. You know what? There comes a point in which conduct is so egregious that no explanation is satisfactory. I hope they catch these four guys. Thankfully, this attack was caught on video. I can't even watch the video. It makes me want to throw up. And I hope they catch these four miscreants, and I hope they throw the book at them. I want to denounce marijuana. Oh, yes, marijuana. I'm not a big, marijuana warrior. I have a lot of friends that smoke marijuana or vape marijuana. That's the big thing. My attitude is, you don't bother me with it. Go ahead, do your thing. But I am forced to denounce marijuana today because a new study out of Denmark has found that in the past 25 years, the number of schizophrenia cases correlated with cannabis use has increased. While only 2% of schizophrenia diagnoses in 1995 were associated with marijuana use, by 2010, that figure had risen to approximately 8%. So authors of this study, which was published in a real journal, the Journal of American Medicine Psychiatry, believe their findings reflect that cannabis, despite its positive reputation relative to other recreational drugs, can be dangerous and have serious mental side effects. I am hearing more of this. And to reach this conclusion, they analyzed decades worth of data from Denmark's National Health Registry focusing on extreme users with cannabis treatment disorder. So there is unfortunately evidence to suggest that cannabis is increasingly seen as a somewhat harmless substance. And according to the authors of this study, that is not the case. They're seeing links with schizophrenia, poorer cognitive function. Now, I don't want to tell you how freaked out I am by the call from Al from Manhattan earlier, who said that my inability to button shirts correctly could be a result of early onset Alzheimer's. The last thing I want to do is add poor cognitive use and schizophrenia to that. So I will be saying no thank you to the marijuana for the foreseeable future. I want to denounce callers who call this show and don't turn off their radio. Guys, I don't know how many times I have to say it. I don't know how many times you have to hear other people say it. I don't know how many times the telephone talent coordinator has to tell you. If you call a radio show, turn your radio off. It's not difficult. You dial 1, you dial 8, you dial 00, you dial 8 again, you dial 4, you dial 8, you dial 9, you dial 2, you dial 2 again, and you dial 1 last 2. By the time that you get to the last 2, turn your flipping radio off. It kills me that people still call this show and I hear it playing in the background. Turn your radio off. For those of you that refuse to turn your radio off when you call this show, I do denounce you. I want to denounce the four soccer teams that took a knee in the Olympics, these four women's soccer teams. You had Sweden, Chile, Great Britain, and the UK. And look, I know it's kind of a cliche at this point, but this country is pretty great. Do we have our problems? Absolutely. Absolutely we have our problems. So is the way to do that to be taking a knee during the national anthem in violation of the Olympic rules? No. And I know it's a cliche at this point, but if you don't like it here, if you find our country so objectionable, so filled with racism and hate, that you need to not even demonstrate a modicum of respect during the national anthem, then you should go and find a country that works better for you. Maybe Russia, maybe Brazil, maybe the Philippines, maybe Cuba. Go find a country that works better for you, please. I want to denounce the state of Arizona. Yes. Arizona actually has ranked, according to CNBC, as the worst state in America to live in. Can you imagine? The worst state in America. So they had a bunch of different factors, but apparently this is due to poor air quality, low public health funding, high crime rates, and a lack of inclusiveness. So there you have it. I'm denouncing Arizona. I'm also denouncing Johnson & Johnson. They are recalling 5 of their sunscreen products for containing traces of benzene. Can I ask a question? Now, benzene is a chemical that's been linked to blood cancers like leukemia. How hard is it if you're making a product that, if you're making a product that is going on people's skin, how difficult is it to not put benzene in that? I mean, I don't understand it. I do not understand it. And I must also denounce dog owners who do not clean up after their dog. So do you know what they're doing in Tel Aviv, Jerusalem? In Tel Aviv, this has gotten so out of control that dog owners are now going to have to register their dog's DNA. And if they're going to if they find dog poop anywhere in Tel Aviv, they are going to track down the DNA and match it to your dog so they can send you a fine. How crazy is it that the government of Tel Aviv has to go to this much trouble? Why? Because you, lazy dog owner, can't be bothered to pick up after your own dog? It drives me crazy when I see dog poop on the floor, on the streets. What are you people doing? Pick up after your dog. How hard is it? Or don't get a dog. Don't get a dog. Get a goldfish. And finally, I must denounce the police in Cape Town, South Africa. I tell you, I do not understand this. So they... two South African police officers were arrested on kidnapping charges after they grabbed an innocent stranger off the street to replace a prisoner who had escaped under their guard. So understand what happened here. These two cops in Cape Town were guarding someone, a prisoner, and they let him escape while they're watching him. Where did he go? Where did he go? Oh, that's him. Let's get him. Let's get him. They see him on the street. Let's get him. Wait a minute. This isn't him. Shh, shh. No, yes, it is. Yes, it is. They arrested an innocent homeless man off the street. First of all, how idiotic do you have to be? You have one job when you are guarding a prisoner. Don't let him go free. That's it. How idiotic do you have to be to let a prisoner you're guarding go free, number one, and then to just pick up some random guy? These two cops, I wish I had their names so I don't have to indict the whole police department in Cape Town, South Africa, but I'm afraid I now do have to indict the whole police department in Cape Town, South Africa. These cops are morons in South Africa, these two specific officers. I wish I had their names. Until I get their names, whoever you are, I do denounce you. If you did something bad this week and you were not on the denunciation list, then you escaped easily. And maybe, you know, try and live a better week next week. I tell you what I won't be doing. I will not be. And if you have comments on any of my denunciations, you can give me a call, 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. I will not be denouncing you if you purchase some Life Change tea. This is a terrific product that I love telling you about. It's an herbal formula, an herbal proprietary formula, a cold tea, very refreshing, that's designed to give you more energy without caffeine. I drink it every day. It tastes great. It's got no fillers. It's completely organic, and it's a mild cleanse, a daily detox that cleanses you from the inside out. That's why their slogan is the tea that makes you go. Read the testimonials for yourself at getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com, and use the promo code Frank. And if you haven't yet tried this, you can not only order tea on getthetea.com, you can order a bunch of great supplements. And whatever you order on there, if you use the promo code Frank, you get free shipping anywhere in the United States. So take advantage of it. It's a great deal. Take advantage of it. GetTheTea.com, promo code Frank.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. You can give us a call at 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Let me say hello to Billy in Rockland County. Hello, Billy.
Hey, good evening, Frank. How are you?
I'm doing well. Good morning.
Good morning. I got a couple questions. If you could have any co-host to be by your side, who would it be?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, I, it's funny. I would like a co-host for a day or a week. I don't necessarily love the idea. I'm not talking about what I do with Juliet, where she's the co-anchor of the news. But I don't necessarily love having a permanent co-host for a talk show because, I don't know, I kind of like to do things on my own and then find a lot of different interesting people and ask them questions. But if I had to pick, you know, so Joe Franklin and I were very close. And it might be Joe because I think we had kind of a chemistry that would play off each other well. It might be Steve Allen. You know, Steve Allen, who was terrific on radio and terrific on TV. I think I could learn a lot from him, so it might be him. It might be him. Jay Diamond not only always tickles my funny bone, but he's somebody that I always learn a lot from whenever I speak to him. But Jay is also someone. Jay's also someone that I think would be better with his own show. Billy,
what does Jay do nowadays? Whatever happened to him?
You know, I talk to Jay once in a while, and, you know, he's not really working right now from what I understand, but he would be great on our station. I'd love it if they would give him a show. As far as I'm concerned, he is the most talented living radio talk show host. Brian Whitman, he's also fun to co-host with. And Mark Simone is actually a very skilled co-host. Simone actually has the skill of being able to host a show with anybody and make them sound better. Whereas a lot of other people can only be partnered with certain folks. Like Ron Kuby, for instance, it's difficult to listen to him partnered with anybody but Curtis. So, you know, so Steve Allen comes to mind, Joe Franklin, maybe Barry Farber.
I got a request somewhere. Also.
Sure, go ahead.
How about having Vincent and Johnny Russo on at the same time?
I'd like to do that. I reached out to Johnny a couple of times, and he says he's busy with some business stuff and he's doing some traveling, but he would be back on the show soon. And I will definitely give Vincent a heads up whenever Johnny Russo makes a return engagement on this show.
Can those two guys like be in the same room together, or does it have to be like
I don't know. I mean, we may have to check with Vincent's parole officer.
Vincent's got a parole officer?
I'm just joking. Just joking.
Vincent's great. I love hearing him on the radio.
Same here. All right, Billy. Frank. Thank you. Have a good weekend. Have a good weekend.
You too.
1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. I will say I am looking forward to I'm supposed to have breakfast with Arthur Idala this morning, a noted criminal defense attorney. He's representing Rudy Giuliani now, representing Harvey Weinstein. But I took the train here from Coney Island, so I don't have my car. So I think what I'm going to do is take the subway after I finish with Juliet in the early news to Bay Ridge, where Arthur lives. We'll grab breakfast. We'll catch up. I'll sleep on the subway on the way there. And then I'll grab the bus from Bay Ridge to where I live. But that'll be fun. And I'll tell you, speaking of communicating, you know what drives me a little up the wall? I have to be honest. People that insist, and this is a younger person's thing, I think. People who insist on FaceTiming you. Now, I don't really FaceTime because I'm not an Apple person. I don't have an iPhone. But I do have WhatsApp. And sometimes, people have the ability to try and FaceTime you. Now, if you're not familiar with FaceTime, it's basically a video conference call. They have the ability to video conference you through WhatsApp. And, you know, Lauren Conlon is the biggest culprit of this. She is always trying to, instead of having a regular phone conversation, she's always trying to have a FaceTime conversation. And it's so annoying. I'm home. Now, keep in mind, the hours that everybody else has regular business hours, I'm basically in pajamas, right? I'm basically in a bathrobe and a T-shirt and pajama pants. A good portion of the day. My hair's all disheveled. I'm unshaven. The last thing I want to do is FaceTime with anybody. I want to be able to take a phone call if I have to, if it can't be done by email or text. I want to be able to take a phone call and by totally invisible and not have people see how I look, not have to worry about looking at the camera, what my facial expressions are saying. It's so annoying. I don't know. And again, I don't even understand why people really need to talk on the phone much these days. You have text messaging, you have email. I think that should cover 80 to 90% of communications these days, except on radio talk shows, where we still, the phone still counts for something. And our phone number happens to be 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222 if you want to comment on anything we are talking about. I'll tell you what I'd like to talk about is an article that I came across in the New York Times on Independence Day weekend about making the case for national service. This is something we, and compulsory national service. This is something we've talked about before. And now, Dr. Jonathan Holloway, the president of Rutgers University, a historian, an author, he's written this essay, which makes a pretty good case for national service, mandatory national service. What do you think? 800-848-WABC, 800-848-9222. But first, let me tell you a little bit about Trinity Rehab. Trinity Rehab is a magnificent facility. If you're suffering from chronic pain, you don't need to be. They will restore your freedom to live your life pain-free. It's not your father's physical therapy. It's cutting-edge, state-of-the-art stuff. They have something called the EPAT machine. It's FDA-approved, non-surgical, acoustic pressure wave technology. It's similar to what's used to break up kidney stones. It breaks up scar tissue. It enhances healing. It gets rid of pain fast. It's effective for conditions like back pain, neck pain, tennis elbow, shoulder tendonitis, plantar fasciitis, knee pain. And in just 3 5-minute sessions, you can be virtually pain-free. No prescription needed to get started. All over New Jersey, Clifton, Paramus, Wayne, Short Hills, Emerson, East Windsor, Shrewsbury, and even Woodbridge. Call Trinity Rehab, 800-518-0977, 800-518-0977, trinity-rehab.com.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
Uno, dos. One, two, three, four.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm going to link to this article from the New York Times that took place on Independence Day weekend. And it's I had it on my list for weeks now to chat about. But it's an article written by Dr. Jonathan Holloway, president of Rutgers University. To unite a divided America, make people work for it. If we Americans listen to one another, perhaps we would recognize how absurd our discourse has become. It's our own fault that political discussions today are hot-headed arguments over whether the hooligans storming the halls of the Capitol were taking a tour or fomenting an insurrection. If we broadened our audiences, perhaps we would see the fallacy of claims that all Republicans are committed to voter suppression and that all Democrats are committed to voter fraud. It seems like an easy challenge to address, but we lack the incentives to change our behavior. And that we are all, regardless of where we sit on the political spectrum, caught in a vortex of intoxication. We have fooled ourselves into thinking that our followers on social media are our friends. They're not. They are our mirrors, recordings of our own thoughts and images played back to us, by us and for us. We feel good about ourselves, sure. But do we feel good as citizens? Do we feel good as Americans? Are we better off? Is America? There are many problems in America, but fundamental to so many of them is our unwillingness to learn from one another, to see and respect one another, to become familiar with people from different racial and ethnic backgrounds and who hold different political views. It will take work to repair this system. But building blocks exist. A good foundation would be a one-year mandatory national service program. Nearly 90 years ago, in response to the Great Depression, FDR created the Civilian Conservation Corps, what was then America's largest organized nationwide civilian service program. About 30 years later, President Lyndon Johnson brought to fruition John F. Kennedy's Domestic Peace Corps initiative. The Volunteers in Service to America program, known as VISTA, today domestic civilian service is dominated by AmeriCorps and non-governmental programs like Teach for America. Taken together, these programs have been enormously successful at putting people to work, broadening the reach of basic social services related to education, health, and welfare. It's funny. Let me pause here. Jeffrey Lichtman, who is a noted criminal defense attorney, he told me, he was giving me advice, and this is about 2007, 2008. He said to me, you know, I've been giving a lot of thought to you and your future and what you should do. And I've decided that the best thing for you is to join the Peace Corps. That will help you develop and grow and, you know, see other parts of the world and broaden your horizons. So it's funny that Jeff had the same thing in mind for me that Dr. Holloway has in mind for so many young people. I thought about it. I didn't end up doing it. Most important, they've helped citizens see the crucial role that they can play in strengthening our democracy. Given that we know service programs can be so effective in shoring up the nation in moments of crisis, the time has come for a broader initiative with higher aspirations and goals. The time has come for compulsory national service for all young people with no exceptions. Universal national service would include 1 year of civilian service or military service for all adults to be completed before they reach the age of 25. With responsibilities met domestically or around the world. I have to tell you, I absolutely love this idea. I absolutely love it because I have noticed that the Generation X crowd and even a lot of older millennials are some of the most selfish people I've ever met. And they view the whole world through the prism of what's best for them, not what's best for the country, not what's best for the world, not what's best for their community, but for them. There's absolutely no sense that they're part of something larger. And I think this would go a long way towards giving a well-needed dose of humility to the next generation of young people. And so in Dr. Holloway's proposal, he's saying it would channel the conscience of the Civilian Conservation Corps and put young people in the wilderness repairing the ravages of environmental destruction. It would draw on the lessons of the Peace Corps and dispatch young Americans to distant lands where they would understand the challenges of poor countries and of people for whom basic health and nutrition are aspirational goals. It would draw on the successes of our military programs that in the past created pathways toward financial stability and educational progress for those with limited resources while also serving as great unifiers among America's races, religions, and social classes. These are but three examples. A one-year universal national service program could take many other forms. But it's easy to imagine that it could be a vehicle to provide necessary support to underserved urban and rural communities, help eliminate food deserts, contribute to rebuilding the nation's infrastructure, enrich our arts and culture, bolster our community health clinics, classrooms, and preschool. Furthermore, because service would be mandatory, it would force all of our young people to better know one another. I'm not going to read the whole column. And there were a lot of letters to the editor against this. But I have to say, I don't know anything about Dr. Holloway. He could be the best guy in the world or the worst. I thought this was brilliant. I thought everything he wrote was absolutely brilliant. So I've linked to it on my Facebook page, facebook.com/MoranoFan. That's facebook.com/MoranoFan. And I think there's a lot to it. I'd love to hear your thoughts. What do you think of this idea of 1 year of mandatory national service? 800-848-9222. A lot of the letters to the editor were against this. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Tell me what they are. 1-800-848-9222. Richard in Parsippany, I'm listening.
Oh, yeah. Hi, Frank.
Hi.
I'm listening to you, Frank. I think what's going on with you, you know, you're staying up all night too much. You're getting sleep deprived. Now, research shows that when you have long-term sleep deprivation, you start exhibiting symptoms of psychosis, and that's what I'm hearing. Now, compulsory service, I think you're playing with words. What you're talking about is forced servitude. That's called slavery, Frank. That's called slavery. Now, whoever this Holloway guy is, he should be in a high-security insane asylum along with you. So straighten up and fly right.
Well, so, Richard,
go ahead.
Jury service, do you consider that slavery?
It might be.
You consider jury service slavery? You think it's similar to people being in chains and forced to work for someone else's profit?
That's the legal term for servitude, slavery. Now, if you look at the Constitution of the United States, I think it's the 13th Amendment, that slavery shall be abolished except in criminal matters, but only upon conviction. So when you hear the term like community service, that's another fake term. You gotta get away from these euphemisms. Yeah. So slavery is still legal. If you're convicted of a crime, you could be made to work. That's the Constitution. So slavery is the illegal term that we use for forced servitude. So find this Dr. Holloway and take him to a doctor because that's where he needs to be.
All right. Well, respectfully,
Frank, slavery is never good. It's
well,
never good.
I'm with you on that front. What is right. Section 2 of the 13th Amendment?
What's that?
What's Section 2 of the 13th Amendment?
I don't understand what you're saying.
There's two sections to the 13th Amendment. You paraphrase Section 1. What's Section 2?
Oh, I forgot.
Oh, all right.
I mean, the purpose of the 13th Amendment is no more slavery unless you got convicted of a crime.
So
then you could be a slave.
So when we had the draft during World War II, for instance, or other armed conflicts that this country had, do you think that was slavery?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And if we didn't have the draft, we wouldn't have had all these unnecessary wars.
All right, Richard. I think we'll have to agree to disagree. I don't think that
you can't disagree. Slavery is bad.
Slavery is bad. I don't think a year of mandatory service as a country's
well, it's
like
illegal too. Frank, it's illegal.
Well, but it's not because it's only illegal. Bad. It's only illegal if you don't know what Section 2 of the 13th Amendment is. And thank you for the call, Richard. Section 2 of the 13th Amendment says Congress shall have the power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. Now, the courts have interpreted that to mean that if the courts mandate that you have to register for the draft or participate in a draft, then that's appropriate. It's considered okay. It also means you could do things like pass the Civil Rights Act to enforce Section 1. I think to call mandatory service, especially what Dr. Holloway is proposing, where you can choose your own form of service, military, Peace Corps, Conservation Corps, AmeriCorps, Teach for America, for you to even use the same word that applied to people being in chains, being forced to work for the profit of others, being raped, being beaten, and treated as property. I think that is really sick and twisted, if you want to know the truth. 800-848-9222. All right, so I'm going to count Richard as one vote against mandatory service. Where do you stand? 1-800-848-9222. Patricia wrote a letter to the editor in the New York Times. She wrote, "When I was about 12 years old, my father took me and my siblings to see a stone bridge he'd helped build over a creek in western Oregon. The stone was green with moss by then, but the bridge was still in use. He had been young and unemployed when the Civilian Conservation Corps was established in 1933. He signed up and lived in a camp for a year, earning a little money and developing self-esteem. Pride in that work stayed with him all his life. Even though his work was voluntary, I agree with Dr. Holloway that a year of mandatory service in something like the CCC would be a very good thing for the soul of America. It feels as though many people in our country, particularly our young, need help appreciating the most basic joy of work worth doing. Where do you stand? 800-848-9222. Mel in New Jersey. Hello. Mel?
Yeah, Frank?
Mel?
I'm sorry, I didn't realize I was on this time. And I pretty much like to commend you on the program of the mandatory service. It's something that kind of influenced me on my interest to come to America, because as a very young man, I met two Americans that were donating time on the Peace Corps. And as a student, long time, and that was like in the 60s, I have heard all the wrong things about America, but I did not hear the good things. And the persons that I met at that time, they were pretty much educating people on how to farm best, how to do a better job in the countryside for the farmers. And my question to them was whether they were being paid money to doing that. And they told me, something that really impressed me at the time, and that was that they did not get paid, that was something that it was done voluntarily, and that it was a very fulfilling job for them because they got to know the Colombia that a lot of people did not know about it. In a way, I got to know the American.
Mel, let me ask you this, though. So the caller I just spoke to, now he might agree with you, but he might say the fact that we're making it mandatory, that is a bridge too far. It's great to encourage volunteerism, but once you make this kind of service mandatory, that's a violation of someone else's freedom. What do you say to that, Mel?
I would say that it's probably because he doesn't know the full feeling of the good feeling about being service to other people. One of the things connected to my job that I do as a realtor right now, and I'm a very old man, but one of the things that I really appreciate is the fact that I'm doing a job, and at the same time, I'm helping other people that otherwise probably would not be able to be helped, and they would probably would not know how they become independent, and how could they be of service to others.
Right.
And to me, that's a blessing.
Well, I agree with you, Mel, and thank you for the call, and you're exactly my kind of American. 800-848-9222. What do you think of this proposal of a year of national service for our nation's young people. I'm all for it. 100% enthusiastically for it. Patrick, here in New York State, what do you think?
Good morning, Mr. Morales. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
That fellow named Richard, I think he has some kind of warped ideas about slavery and servitude. If you don't want to be in jury duty, just take yourself off the voter roll.
Well, it's actually not the case anymore in New York. There's actually four different sources that you that they get that they call the list of for jury duty. It's a lot more than just the voter rolls.
Really?
Yeah,
I mean, I'm not a resident of New York, but. Geez, I mean, I just took myself off the voter roll because I got tired of jury security.
No, I mean, it comes from four different sources. I will get you that answer where they come from in just a minute, but it's not just the voter rolls. If you own property, if you have a driver's license, if you, you know, if you're registered to vote, that's one. There's a number of other things. Let me say hello to Larry on Long Island. Hello, Larry.
Frank, Section 1 bans two things, slavery and involuntary servitude. Section 2 says Congress can enforce those two bans, the ban on slavery and the ban on involuntary servitude.
Thank you, Larry. Gary on Staten Island, what do you think?
Make America great again. Yes, put all the young people in the military, ever since Vietnam and the end of the draft, has been a social problem. You have this many problems. You have 300,000 illegals now getting a $15,000 check in New York State. They're not even citizens of America, and they're getting money. This is crazy, obviously, et cetera. So, yes, make America great again via this idea. This is a correct idea.
Thank you.
It will also, in addition, enable young people to learn how to use their Second Amendment right to bear arms so we can have a social revolution and overthrow the establishment.
All right. Well, let's leave that last part aside for a second. I'm not endorsing, you know, Gary's idea on using guns to foment a social revolution. Let me take one more quick call here. Dr. Lamb is in Manhattan. Hello, Dr. Lamb.
Good morning, sir. Thank you for this bringing up this issue. I approve it 1,000%. I've been dreaming and begging for such a program. When I was doing my master's in anthropology, I did field studies in Nigeria. You know that it's basically tribal in different sections. Every person who attends university, because it's federal, is required to do 1 year's of National Youth Service before they can be employed. They must bring that certificate to prove that they've done the service.
Right.
It socializes young people. They do get a stipend. They have to learn the language of the tribe where they've been stationed. All of them agree that it changed their life. It gave them maturity. It gave them structure. It gave them responsibility. I just approve it 1,000%.
Yeah, same here, Doc.
Thank you for providing this forum. You're always going to get pushback. Even if you're giving out things for free today, people will be arguing about
it. You're right about that,
so
Dr.
I agree it with 1,000%. Thank you for presenting this. We have to start somewhere.
Thank you, Dr. Lamb. Look, there's all sorts of things that we have to do that are mandatory. James emailed me, is it slavery if children by law must attend school? Of course not. Of course it's not. And then he adds that caller was on the fringe, I think. I think so, too. But whatever. I don't mind fringe people. I'm on the fringe. So we want fringe people listening. Who else do you think is up at this time? Hey, we'll do 15 seconds of fame next. You can call on any subject for 15 seconds. 800-848-9222. Be heard for 15 seconds. 1-800-848-WABC. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
other side of midnight. This is 15 Seconds of Fame.
Gordon in Ottawa, hello.
Hi, how are you, Frank? I like the idea of 1 year national service if you're young and able-bodied. But I'd also like to have them immigrants have be required to perform volunteer service, like 2,000 hours or see in the movies.
800-848-9222, Joe in New York City.
Hello. You just, a few calls ago, you had the worst caller on the planet. I've been listening to talk radio for over 20, 30 years, and you just, three calls ago, had the worst, most disgusting caller. I served, you know, and I've never done anything better. I believe everyone 18 to 36 months.
Ted in New Jersey.
Hello, Frank. I concur with your denunciation of Ben and Jerry's. May their ice cream melt prematurely, just like your fan on the Flory Dories.
Mike in West Palm.
Always good show, Frank. Gary Staten Island, good caller. Come on, man. Revolution, you're 2 years younger than me, 65. No. People, no more revisionist history. How many more statues are you going to have to take down? And let the black leaders talk about black-on-black crime. Don't.
Pete in Bay Ridge.
Sizzle moron, sizzle moron.
I think we'll end on that note. What a week it's been. My thanks to Rob and to Molly. It's great to have you back, Molly. And don't go anywhere. I'm sticking around for the next 90 minutes with Juliette Huddy. We're going to bring you the early news. But if you want to stay in touch with me, you can email me, frank.morano@wabcradio.com. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Search The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, whatever podcast app you use, or go to fmwabc.com. Find me on Twitter, @FrankMorano.